You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, I'm Joe Heath.
I'm Tony Heath.
And this is the Watchathon Wrestle-On.
You said that like, this is...
The story of a doctor. Today, we're going to be talking about the feature-length 20th anniversary special that the Five Doctors...
Yep.
Heads up, I'm a little drunk.
We're both kind of drunk. That's the best way to start a podcast.
It's the best way to do everything, right?
No.
That's what I'm saying.
We got to actually have a talk.
This special aired November 23rd, 1983 in the U.S. and 2 days later in the U.K.
Scandal.
Bizarre.
True facts!
I want to give a special shout out to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net.
And you wrote it down this time, and I'm very proud of you.
It's been written down for multiple episodes.
Okay.
Joining us today... are a plethora, that means too many, of guests.
That means we're going to kick some of you out. Maybe we're going to eliminate you as the podcast goes on.
Right now, we currently have, in the order I wrote them down, which is also alphabetical by their first name, we've got Adam Clegg. Welcome back.
Thank you. Woo. Hey. It's 1:10 in the morning. Hooray.
Woo. We've got Christine Cherry.
Hi, I'm here and the world is on fire.
Yeah.
I forgot to give you a middle name.
Christine Tangerine Cherry.
Sure.
That's the dream.
What time is it there for you, Chris?
It is a really chill... It's time for final thoughts.
No, no, no.
Is what it is. It's 5:11 in the PM.
Next up, we have the other half of the Robert Holmes duo, Felicity Cousinitz.
Hello. I am at the same time as Joe and Tony.
Which is what?
8:11.
8:11 PM in the Eastern time zone of the United States.
And last, but certainly not the least.
A little bit least.
A little bit least. The yes. Person who made our theme song, it's Vincent E. L.
Yeah.
Hi, it's 2 AM here and I'm awake for now.
Vince, you look comfy as hell.
I'm in bed.
Vince is prepared for the inevitable.
Every time we've done one of these drunk podcasts, Vince doesn't drink. But they do stay up so late that they're punch drunk. So it like evens out.
I mean, I didn't choose to stay up late for the podcast. You chose to record the podcast late and I just happened to be awake still.
The problem is I had to do it late enough for that's not too late for us, but not too early for other. It's everybody on this damn thing is in way different time zones and it's impossible to schedule. But today.
We did it anyway.
We did it anyway.
If only you had time scooped us all out.
Should have time scooped all of y'all.
I want my own little action figure.
Time travel must give you, like, mad jet lag. Or just never jet lag.
Yeah, I think you just get rid of jet lag. Like, you always have jet lag until you eventually just get used to it and it stops mattering.
Did you stop sleeping?
Sounds like my life. Like, you're just tired all the time and you're like, whatever.
No wonder the doctor used to take naps all the time.
I feel like since I fly to California, well, not next year because everything sucks, but every February I go to... from the East Coast to the West Coast, and, you know, that doesn't have any effect on me anymore.
I'm never really jet-lagged, but I never know what day it is.
You're not jet-lagged because you're not aware of the concept of time, and
yeah.
That's what happens when you're a time traveler.
Maybe I'm secretly a time traveler.
I'd believe it.
I never know what day it is because I've been working from home since March, and time has no meaning anymore.
It's imaginary, and that's fine.
Just for the record, this is the first time I've recorded a podcast while wearing my pajamas.
Excellent.
Really?
We got two people ready for bed.
Sadly, I sleep in the nude, but, you know.
I'm recording my pajamas all the time, which is bad because we do videos for patrons.
I do podcasts in Tony's pajamas as well. It's very odd.
Yeah, that's true.
They don't fit.
I know, and you're kind of stretching them all out.
Yeah, but it's because
fine.
I need more room.
It just makes them comfier.
Yeah, that's true. So you want? Do we want to talk about the five doctors?
I guess.
Might as well.
All right, let's talk about the five doctors, which I don't have a title for because it's one thing. It doesn't need a title. But I will give you guys a fun fact.
Okay.
It was almost called The Six Doctors.
What?
That was the original title for this special.
Explain.
What, before Terrence Dix wrote this.
Yeah.
By the way, Terrence Dix wrote this. It was originally going to be written by Robert Holmes, who created Chris and Felicity.
Yeah. As we call him, Daddy.
Daddy.
And his pitch for this special was called The Six Doctors, because there was going to be two first doctors.
Why?
One of them was going to be a robot fake.
Oh my god, because that happened in the Chase, I think? The first doctor
yeah.
story?
Yeah.
A very, very unconvincing robot double.
But they weirdly cut to like William Hartnell sometimes, and then didn't in others, and it never made sense why they chose to do it when they did it.
Yeah, that was lame.
Here's the thing about like the multi-doctor things. If you asked me to put all the multi-doctor stories in order and I just had the titles and no other knowledge
yeah.
of Doctor Who, I'd be unable to do it.
Well, it's because the two doctors are so tricky.
Yeah, so yeah. If this one was called The Six Doctors, I'd be like, might as well be.
Well, it really might as well. I mean, because you do have the Hartnell clip at the very beginning, so technically...
That's true.
Yeah?
You see all six doctors.
Do you think they put that in there just so that they could actually have William Hartnell in just a little bit?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And it's such a great, you know, it's a great quote.
It's very nostalgic.
And it, like, works, because he's like, I will return. And then he does.
And then he does a little.
And this is the first time he sees... the first and only time he sees Susan again after she leaves.
What's Susan Steele?
Yeah, she's like...
She didn't get time scoops.
I think we don't see it. I mean, I think it's...
It's implied that she gets...
It's fine to... Yeah, it's implied, and it's like, it would be overkill if we had to see every single one. So it's like, it switches it up a little bit. I like that.
It literally would have gotten us drunker.
Oh shit. Yeah.
Yeah, we did a drinking game while watching it, and that was just like, we just did it.
We like doing the multi-doctor stories as like big...
Group things.
Big group messes.
But the rules were drink every time someone gets time scooped, and drink every time someone says Rassilon.
That was, in retrospect, perhaps a mistake.
Perhaps.
I drank
so many yeah. times.
That's what I said when Joe told me about it.
They said Rassilon a lot.
I drank 2.5 Mike's Hard Lemonade.
And he is gone.
I'm still drinking it because I'm thirsty.
I mean, I had, I think, two or three glasses of champagne. Because I'm fancy.
So they decided not to go with the Robert Holmes version. They went with the Terrence Dix version. But the original version of Terrence Dix version also had Tom Baker in it. And things were a little more shuffled around.
Why couldn't they get Tom Baker again?
Because Tom Baker said no.
He decided to be a jerk.
He said, I can't be the star, so fuck off.
Basically.
That sounds right.
I think, if I'm remembering everything correctly, and I am drunk, Five's plot line of the Gallifrey plot line was originally going to be four. One was going to stay in the TARDIS with...
Just be old.
Yeah, and just be old. And I guess Five would probably have taken One's role.
I like Five with Tegan, though. I mean, I like One with Tegan.
I do, too!
It also makes more sense for Five to be the one doing all the Time Lordy type stuff. Like, the Gallifrey stuff.
Right, because he's the current.
It'd be weird if you showed up with, like, a bunch of your younger selves, and, like, the people who knew you now just, like, was only talking to, like, 15-year-old you. I would find that infuriating.
Yeah.
I think maybe the idea was probably to connect the activity to which Doctor would be associated with that kind of activity. So they would have put the fourth Doctor with the Gallifrey stuff, because the fourth Doctor had a lot of Gallifrey stuff.
Right.
And also... Three was going to be hooked up with Brig, and two was going to be hooked up with Jamie, but Jamie's schedule didn't allow
for that one day.
Yeah, so that's why it wasn't two and Jamie.
Honestly, two on the Brig is so much fun, and we didn't get enough of it, so I'm glad.
Yeah, on the whole, it definitely was better to have two and the Brig together.
Yeah, they are both great actors, so it just works out.
Yeah, their dynamic together is just delightful.
It's probably for the best that Baker couldn't do it in the end, because as the biggest doctor, he would have simply eaten the other ones.
That is a 100% true. So
yeah, it took him another 25 years to mellow enough to just do basically the cameo in the 50th anniversary special and to be completely delightful.
And they did get his waxwork in for some photos, which is just as good, surely. So
they should have just dragged that waxwork into the episode.
It kind of justifies Shada's existence at this point because it was never, you know, they had never intended to release any of it. So to have those scenes was like a gift.
Man, those scenes too, they just seem comfy.
Right? They're so comfy.
I want to be there.
Part of it is the film. I think part of it is also that that's shot on film. And film just feels more comfy. But just, yeah, it feels so nice and... They're on a river, and it's foreign Romana. It's nice.
Yeah, it's romantic. It's like this is when they were getting along with each other, and Romana looks at him fondly, if exasperatedly.
Does Douglas Adams get a credit for this at all?
No, he doesn't. He doesn't.
Should we try and kind of do a run-through of
the plot? Sure.
In some kind of order. I'm not super interested in doing it, but maybe we should.
All right, first things first.
I don't want to interrupt like a good conversation to be like, and then this happened, and then this happened. But maybe we should put in some bones.
Yeah, let's put in some bones. So, I mean, like, we already mentioned that we started off with a little pre-title recap of that scene from the first Doctor. Get him in there. So, this is the first time in a while I feel like we've had a pre-credit sequence. Yeah. I'm not sure. But the first thing we get in the episode proper is the Doctor is cleaning the TARDIS console, and it's a brand new console.
It's pretty spiffy. I'm a fan.
Yeah, I think they changed the console all around, too. It's not just the console. It's like the whole room, right? Or something? Maybe I'm wrong. They rebuilt it so that it was easier to put together. They're like, the way it was done before made no sense. And like this, you can just take it apart and put it back together and like in a way that makes sense in a way that it didn't before.
I let me just interject that this was the first Doctor Who story that I ever watched in 1984, which was when I first caught on to the series. And so much of this, like the look of this, is like the quintessential version of X. So this is the quintessential TARDIS control room for me.
It's nice and chonky.
It's chonky?
It's got a lot of buttons.
Little monitors, too.
That was really, like, efficient for this one to be your first one.
Yeah.
Hey,
get all that lore in and out of the way.
No kidding.
This was among the first few Doctor Who things I watched. I don't think it was the first. I think the first I watched was probably The Christmas Invasion.
First I watched was An Unearthly Child.
Yeah. I think the first I watched was probably Rose.
The first one I watched was randomly The Unquiet Dead. Because that was what was on TV. But I think this is definitely, while not the first Classic Who story I saw, I definitely saw it like early on in my Classic Who journey, if you will. You don't have to.
I remember people kind of recommending it because it's like, you do. It is efficient.
Literally, it was pure coincidence for me because this was 1984. Channel 2 in Boston was airing it every weekday evening at 7. And I had actually a neighbor of mine who was a couple years older, but who was into like, you know, he was a geek. I was a geek. We kind of shared book recommendations and stuff. And one day he said, I think you would like Doctor Who. And I was aware that it was a thing. So I turned it on like the next day and it was The Five Doctors.
God, I have like a very vivid memory of me watching New Who for the first time and like telling my mom about it and my mom being like, oh yeah, I know Doctor Who because my uncle, her brother, is like super into it, like went to all the conventions and stuff like before that was like a thing that people did in the States kind of thing. So she was like, yeah, I knew about it. I knew you would like it, but I don't want to tell you about it because it was too nerdy. And I was like, what?
It was broken up into episodic form, so I saw it as if it were a four-parter, although the cliffhangers don't quite work. They're kind of like the Sixth Doctor era when they go to double-length episodes when they introduce the cliffhangers. And then this was actually the newest episode that PBS had at the time, so they went right back to Tom Baker. They went right back to Robot after this.
So you actually got to actually see four and not just in two scenes.
Right. I've said this a million times, but I was, sitting there watching Tom Baker and not really getting into it too much and thinking, okay, when does this guy die and turn into the cute blonde guy? But I got hooked. Actually, I think I did raise that because the first episode of the Watchathon I did was Pyramids of Mars, and that was the episode that really cemented me as a fan.
The first time I actually saw this specific episode was the Riff Tracks version. So, and I was trying not to pay super attention to it because I didn't want to get spoiled. I was like, I'm just going to listen to the jokes and that's it.
You're such a bizarre human being.
I know.
I felt weird about that because to that point, I mean, and through that, you know, Kevin and I had been to every single Riff Tracks live event. And so, and we went to that and I'm just like, it's a little weird because Kevin doesn't like Doctor Who and I don't know what he's going to think of it. So it was interesting. Anyway, yeah, I'm derailing us yet further.
I mean, we knew what was happening.
I'm three mics hards in, so.
And for Joe, that's a lot.
That's a lot.
Do you have a mics hard out?
If I fall asleep, Tony, it's up to you to just.
Oh God. Oh no.
Just pick it up.
We better.
Let's better get rolling. So back to the story.
Yeah.
So Tegan criticizes the new console and says it's probably pretty shitty. And the doctor's like, no, it isn't. And then it's pretty shitty.
She says, you were decorated. I don't like it. No, that happens later.
That happens later. But he Fonzie's it, bangs it on it, and the door opens.
So Tegan's like, oh, business as usual.
And then she does this like adorable laugh when he does leave.
It's very bantery.
And she's got a new outfit. It's similarly multicolored.
But she's got that great jacket over it still. The big fur coat.
My affection for Tegan probably stems from this being the first episode I saw because, you know, she is annoying early on in her...
Dreams are private!
Yeah. But I like her because she's really, I mean, she's literally my first companion.
Yeah, and she's quite good-natured in this.
Yeah, oh yeah, she's not. She's definitely softened at this point and... Even she and Turlough, she and Turlough don't wind up interacting a whole lot because they switch around the configurations of characters. But yeah, they're getting along now. She's forgotten all about Nyssa, her girlfriend.
Aww. Can I just say about Turlough that I really admire a man who's so dedicated to his fetish that five stories in, he still hasn't taken off that schoolboy uniform.
Yeah, this would have been like the best time for Turlough to have a costume change because it's. You know, it's separate from the season, from the, you know, it's a special episode, so he really could have gotten...
And yet,
no.
I'm still watching the fourth Doctor, so I don't even know who that character is.
He's the worst. I mean, I guess he gets better.
He's a little shit.
Is he worse than Ben?
No.
Not Patton. The other Ben.
No.
No, we like Ben Patton.
No, like, Turlough's kind of like a shit on purpose.
Yeah. He's a good, like, he's a well-written character. He's just he's written as a little shit. That's just his deal.
He's deliberately unlikable. As opposed to Adric, who just became unlikable.
Where is Chameleon?
Where is Chameleon?
Yeah, where is Chameleon?
Was there a cut Chameleon scene in this episode, or was it a different episode?
Not in this one. It's Awakening that he has a missing scene in, I think.
They just forget about him. I forgot about him, shit.
He's a shape changer. He could be anyone. He could actually be Richard Herndon's first Doctor, which would make more sense than believing that's William Hartnell.
If he could have, like... interactive with the Rastan warrior robot or something like that. How cool would that have been?
He would have to turn into a copy of the robot. And then there'd be two of them. They had to like bounce around and do gymnastics at each other.
Out teleport each other. It'd be like on Umbrella Academy when there's another character who goes by the number 5 and that, so that's a little weird. 5 is fighting someone who has the same powers as him and they're just zapping in and out.
Yeah,
that was cool a great scene.
I just finished Umbrella Academy season 2 and loved it to death.
It was very good.
Yeah. Back to Turlough for a second. I think he looks like a young Mr. Burns from The Simpsons.
Weird.
Yeah, he does.
He's got the same outfit and he kind of does the hand thing a lot. He always looks like he's planning something.
Yeah, he definitely has the same vibe.
Also, we learn in this episode that he is an artiste and he's drawing something. He shows it to the doctor and the doctor is somewhat judgmental of it.
Well, that's funny because remember Tegan did some drawings in For the Doomsday and we have not seen her do that yet. But so it would have made more sense almost if she was doing the drawing.
There's a lot of like, this would have made sense if a different character was doing it.
Well, you know, Terrence Dix draws in broad strokes.
Man, I like the idea of the Isle of Orion. Of like a place that like constantly feels like right after it rains.
It's just a planet of chill.
I want to go there. I want to go to planet chill.
Me too. Especially this year.
Right? Oh my god.
I do have a slight problem with the fact that it just looks like Earth.
It's Wales on a wet weekend. And every 80s British child, I guarantee, would have been like, that looks like the place I go to my parents on caravan holidays with. So I think the doctor just lies to them. He's like, yeah, I took you to the Isle of Orion. This isn't near Cardiff.
Oh, that's distressingly plausible.
Yeah, it feels like after a storm happened. A storm didn't just happen. We're in space.
Yeah, it rains a lot in Wales, so you can just say that. It's like, yeah, it's definitely Isle of Orion.
It's just a very positively charged place.
Yeah, it's literally positive ions hit it. Because, like, positive means, like, positive in a happy way, not just, like, positively charged.
That's just science.
I'm a biochemist, and I just kind of put all that aside when I watch Doctor Who. Because the neutron flow, as I think Vincent pointed out, yeah, neutrons don't flow. And they don't have a polarity.
They're neutral.
And they don't have polarity. So, I mean, reversing the polarity of the neutron flow takes a lot of skill.
It's something only a Time Lord can do.
It's their main defining feature.
They're neutral.
Meanwhile, in an English garden...
We're waiting for the sun.
We meet the first Doctor, kinda, who gets scooped up by a black triangle.
Oh yeah, should we talk about new scoop versus old scoop?
Yeah.
Because when we watched the riff tracks, that was new scoop.
Was it new scoop?
It was new, yeah, I remember. It was like swirly.
It's swirly and yellow.
I didn't remember that, but I have watched, I've actually watched the new version with commentary with Peter Davison and Terrence Dix, which is hilarious.
I don't know what version I was accidentally watching initially, because it was not yellow. It was like a weird wavy thing. It was not swirly. It was like a triangular fabric thing.
Yeah, it was like warped. Yeah.
It's still triangular.
It looks like a cone that's made of fabric that somebody's waving.
I'm pretty sure that's the version they used in Riff Tracks. I'm pretty sure we've seen that.
Oh, yeah, I do remember, because they screw around with Rassilon's voice and it sucks.
Yeah, it's different.
What a weird choice. Why did they? Why?
They didn't think he sounded Rassilon-y enough or like powerful. If they thought, you know, he's just like a guy. He's just he's just like a regular dude.
Is it like deeper and more menacing?
Yes, it's very, it's like ridiculously.
It's like, it's alien and otherworldly, but like in a bad way.
Yeah, it's like, this is the game of Rassilon.
Yeah, it's real deep.
I don't understand the need to fix things when you re-release things.
Right? The original Time Scoop is fine. The original Time Scoop is just a flat 2D black triangle.
I want that information.
I really like the effect of, like, when someone's caught and, like, their face is frozen and it looks like they're in pain. Like, I always thought that was really cool.
And then it flips.
It is interesting.
It reminds me of an episode of Wonder Woman where there are, like, these alien pyramids and, like, people... like, see their reflection in them, but, like, they're fit, like, it's all distorted and they look like they're in pain.
It's one of those things where, like, a bad effect kind of looks more alien and terrifying.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about, like, just the first Doctor in general for a sec. Richard Herndl.
I couldn't correct you if I was sober, so you just say it with confidence.
Herndl.
I think it's Herndl.
Herndl.
It's definitely not Heimdall.
What do we think about his performance? I think it's really good. It's not, I feel like it's not an impression. He's just playing the character.
I think it's good and it's more likable than Hartnell. I mean, Hartnell softens during his tenure, certainly, but David Bradley is definitely doing, like, the snippier Hartnell. Even though, ironically, it's, like, supposed to be him at the end of his life. I think that, you know, this was obviously the first time, you know, this is the first Doctor I experienced, and I think he's, you know, he's a little bit patronizing, but comes across as more likable, certainly, than Pertwee does, because Pertwee is very patronizing toward Sarah Jane.
Herndl's playing, like, the idea of an old man.
Of a grandfather.
As opposed to the thing that Hartnell is doing, which is a lot more impish.
Hartnell looked older than he was, always. Yeah, he wasn't that old. He was younger than Capaldi, wasn't he?
The aspects of William Hartnell that I think Yoda is partially based on were not present.
No.
Oh my gosh, Vincent, I've always thought that too. I've always seen a similarity between them.
Oh yeah, me too. It's definitely there. But yeah, and no one else doing one or trying to do Hartnell ever gets that part.
I will say, I think Herndl does a little bit of a better job than, say, David Bradley at not just being a grumpy old man, though. Like, there's, like, definitely moments where Herndl is just having fun. And I feel like David Bradley doesn't get to do that a lot. And specifically when he's playing, not the docudrama, but the Capaldi episode specifically.
I have a lot of issues with that episode anyway. But
I do, too. I feel like this version of the Doctor is at least more in character with who the Doctor is than the David Bradley version.
Just grumpy.
Who's just grumpy.
I find that really interesting because I think Cards on the Table, I actually really like Twice Upon a Time, but I do appreciate issues people have with it. But I feel like David Bradley's Doctor is actually more based on Richard Herndl's Doctor than it is on William Hartnell's.
That's interesting.
Because it's little things like the kind of bits of sexism you get with Herndl's Doctor, which, as you know, you don't get rid of Hartnell. I feel, yeah, Hartnell is more impish, and Hartnell's got that kind of opposite of Matt Smith in the sense of the old man who's young on the inside, and you don't get that at all with Herndon. My favourite thing about it is according to rumour and myth, Jonathan Turner saw Herndon originally in the Blake 7 episode, I think, Assassin. And was like, oh, he looks a lot like Hartnell. Apparently just thought it at the time this would have been like 80, 81. But given that in that particular episode, which I have seen, if I remember correctly, Herndon spends a lot of time in what looks like a giant nappy. That's a slightly weird image, I feel, GNT had of Hartnell. But I feel, you know, it's fine. It's not Hartnell, and you know it's not going to be Hartnell. So what you get, it's not Hartnell. But it's close enough. It's fine. It does the job.
I think he gets the spirit of it.
It's genial, but less specific.
Yeah, coming from the perspective where this is, you know, I saw this, and I'm sure all, pretty much, you know, most of us saw this before we went back and saw any actual Hartnell.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Not me.
Right, not, except for Joseph.
I don't know. I don't know what I would have seen first if I would have seen Five Doctors or Unearthly Child.
I don't know either.
I saw all of Hartnell before I saw Five Doctors.
Not everyone is you. In fact, almost no one is.
I may have seen Unearthly Child before this the first time. It's a long time ago.
This performance is always going to permanently color my vision of the First Doctor to some degree. So it's hard for me to judge how close it is. But it's definitely less the impish quality is missing, as I think Adam said.
It's a bit more like the Hartnell you get in An Unearthly Child, which had been shown fairly recently. Well, I think during the Five
Faces.
Yeah, Five. Thank you. It's 1:40 in the morning, so my brain is occasionally trailing off on facts. So that might have been fresher in people's minds when Terence was writing this, because Terence never wrote for the first. No, he definitely didn't. So you know, he gets Troughton's voice right. He gets Pertwee's voice. Obviously, he can do that. He would have been able to do Baker if Baker had been in. But Hartnell's not what he's ever really written for before. So I wonder how much that plays into it as well.
Right, because he was hardly in the Three Doctors. And he's not really, you know, he's obviously, you know, kind of ill at that point and not really himself.
He's a lot like Tom Baker in this episode. So the First Doctor gets scooped up by this black triangle thing, gets turned into an action figure and put upon a game board, a five-sided game board.
We kind of go through everybody and do that.
Yeah, everybody sort of gets scooped and put on the game board. But when the First Doctor gets scooped, the Fifth Doctor grabs his chest and says he feels a twinge of cosmic angst.
This might be one of my favorite Doctor Who lines of all time.
It's such an evocative phrase.
Yeah, because I feel it. You ever just, like, feel sad and don't know why, and you're like, that's cosmic angst.
Maybe your predecessors have been time scooped.
They probably have.
Having just watched another time travel series, I'm going to say it's like a glitch in the Matrix.
And then we get our next returning favorite, the Brigadier!
Yay! I love him!
He is returning to UNIT for some reason, some sort of reunion.
Like a, yeah, ceremony or...
It's the 25th anniversary.
Right, and it's funny because it's just after we saw him in Modern Undead.
I like that the UNIT is having the 25th anniversary because they're a little farther ahead in the future.
Oh my. This is the second time that Troughton says, "You've redecorated, I don't like it," because he says that to Pertwee in the Three Doctors. And that, of course, becomes a thing.
The doctor does sort of barge his, the second doctor barges his way in to this UNIT reunion.
So, what's up with the second doctor? When is he from?
Good question.
We were talking about that in the chat a little bit, because technically, you know, later he recognizes that Jamie and Zoe shouldn't know him, but that's knowledge he literally gains right before he regenerates. So he does say he's breaking the rules, and later on there's a kind of fan wank theory that becomes...
That Terence Dix fully hopped on board with, by the way.
Right, oh yeah, he did that, right, he wrote novels set in that time, but it's technically, so it's like between the time that at the end of the War Games when Jamie and Zoe are taken away from him and he regenerates, he's forced to regenerate into John Pertwee.
The reason this problem comes up is that it's because in the original version of the script, that was not Jamie and Zoe. It was, I think it might have still been Jamie, but it was Victoria, and she was going to call him the Brigadier, and he'd be like, "You don't know that he's the Brigadier."
Oh, that would have been better.
It would have saved us from season 6B, which I've always loathed as an idea.
Oh, good. I'm so glad to hear you say that, because I hate it too.
I mean, it's a dumb idea.
The thing thing is, you don't have to fix anything. You can just be like, it's broken.
Hmm. Yeah.
It's a Doctor Who podcast, actually, that taught me the difference between the Watsonian versus the Doylist perspective. So, you know, Doyle wrote Sherlock Holmes. So there's reasons Sherlock Holmes does what he does because Doyle wrote it that way. But then there's the within the story reason, which is the Watsonian perspective. So, right, the reason within the story that something happens is going to be at odds with, often going to be at odds with the reason that the storyteller did that.
I mean, it's definitely fun, I think, to come up with like a Watsonian explanation for a Holmesian problem. But also you can get like too in the weeds with it, mm-hmm. where you just be like,
Which is the entire reason for Big Finish's existence.
I will say, the great thing about Doctor Who is that the Watsonian explanation of anything like this is always just time's weird.
Timey-wimey. Yeah, we get a word for it later.
Time is changing constantly in the past and the future. It's always churning. Sometimes things come into existence and sometimes they don't.
And the Doylean explanation for any given thing is there is no canon.
Exactly. It's Robert Holmes forgot who went on missions for the Time Lords in the case of the two doctors.
And this one, it was Terrence Dix, which is like, wait, I can't use Victoria? Shit. I will say, like, when Two comes into this, like, unit scene, he just comes in full force. He is just there and having a good time, like,
oh, yeah.
Immediately.
Oh, yeah. I missed him.
He's the best part of this whole thing.
Oh, 100%.
He is a national treasure. I love that even though there's so little of him, that Matt Smith really connected with him and drew a lot on his performance for his own doctor.
I do wish we had more, too.
I wish we had better, too.
So I personally love Enemy of the World, and I was really, really glad. I mean, I didn't know how good it was until I saw it, obviously, but like I think was a lot better than I expected it to be. But yeah, I think that we had most of the last season, which is kind of crap, except for the War Games, which is too long.
Although, no, because last season is also Mind Robber, right?
Oh, Mind Robber. Yeah, Mind Robber's pretty good.
Oh, yeah. But I, like, love, like, four different things that he does, like, right off the bat, which is he storms in. And he's like, no one tells me what to do, basically. And like the guy, the unit guy.
I'm not. What does he say? That he's I'm not allowed anywhere.
I am allowed everywhere. Yeah, I'm allowed everywhere.
Yes.
Yeah. And he storms in, and like the unit guy grabs his coat, like to stop him, and he just slips out of it. Like, thank you.
Thanks for taking my coat.
Ah, oh, so good. And then he asks who this other unit soldier is, and Briggs says, "Oh, this is Colonel Crichton, shot through a wormhole. My replacement." Then Two looks at him and goes, "Ah, mine was pretty unpromising too."
So that's interesting too, because that proves that well, he and the Third Doctor recognize each other. So this is after the events of the Three Doctors, which they both remember.
And then he also does the, you know, "You've had this place redecorated. I don't like it."
He's just like, he's the anti-establishment doctor, and Pertwee is the establishment doctor. Who literally is working for the government.
And then Two and Briggs sort of reminisce about times past and future. They literally mention the only three times they've been together. And then also a time that we haven't seen. Which I wonder, I'm sure Big Finish has probably done something with it. They mention some sort of thing that they haven't done yet.
The terrible Zoden, which I think gets a call out perhaps in the Colin Baker era, but it's never...
Attack of the Cybermen.
And if Big Finish has done it, I don't know of it, but I don't follow a lot of Big Finish.
I don't think they have, and I don't follow either, but a lot of them either. But oddly enough, it's one of those... I'm fairly certain it's one of the few things... And given Big Finish will go through writers' bins and pull out old plot ideas they never used and makes plays, I don't think they've ever done anything with Zodin, which is, yeah, shocking, really.
It would seem to be the most odd, like, one of the first ones off the pile to me.
Yeah, someone's got to get on it.
We'll do that as the first episode of Family Unit.
Oh, okay.
60th anniversary coming up.
There you go.
Oh my god. I forgot about Family Unit.
It's the Brig raising baby Ben.
Oh my gosh.
Baby Ben stays a baby and the Brig has to raise him. And that's Family Unit.
But yeah, then they get scooped. The doctor has more chest pains, passes out. Three drives away from the scoop in Bessie.
Bessie gets scooped.
Bessie gets left in the death zone.
I'm so concerned.
Maybe that's why he has the Whomobile later.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
I don't remember, like, what episodes Bessie appears in the last season of Pertwee. So, yeah, this is obviously a Pertwee who knows Sarah Jane, so it's sometime in his last season.
Can we just admire the second Doctor running away music and the third Doctor driving music that we get in these scenes? It's just like... Just want to call out that out.
Very good.
Quite like it.
Real quickly, didn't Bessie show up in a Sarah Jane?
I don't remember.
Maybe.
I don't know. I think Bessie shows up again. I think it showed up like once in New Who. Like maybe in the one that the break was on Sarah Jane.
Someone mentioned in chat that this makes K-9 and Company canon because Sarah has K-9, but also she has him in School Reunion, so that would have canonized it if it wasn't already.
But like, where did she get K-9?
This is actually K-9 Mark IV, right? She gets it in a box, but we don't know which doctor sent it.
And until we see it depicted on screen, we never will.
K-9's cameo in this is very short. He just goes, "Danger!" And that's basically it.
Right, he's the Lost in Space robot.
But K-9 is there, and it's very exciting.
Apparently, the actor was like very excited to do it. Then he got the script and was like, oh.
Oh, no.
It's just this scene.
Poor John Leeson.
But he gets this...
He kind of sucks, though, right? Oh, so we shouldn't feel too bad.
I've heard he sucks.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I'm sorry to hear that. I know... I mean, I certainly know some actors who suck, but I hadn't heard that about him. I broke it to Joe during the Modern Undead recording that Ian Levine's... Not Ian Levine, sorry, John Levine.
I mean, Ian Levine did suck.
Ian Levine absolutely sucked, but John Levine also kind of sucked.
But does he suck as much as Richard Franklin?
No, definitely not. We're getting dark. I'm almost done with my second cider. I'm sorry.
Cut this bit out. Cut this bit out for libel.
I'm the best guest.
I also just want to point out in the K-9 scene, there's a close-up of the gate, and there's a beware of the dog in a computer font that I've used many times.
It's like the Futura font, the one that's like...
It looks like a computer readout. I forget the name of the font. I've used it in a video called Neil's New Robot because it looks like that.
Isn't it like Westminster or something like that?
Possibly. It's also the font for Not Quite Human, if you've seen that Disney movie.
No, I've not.
Oh, that is aggressively a Joe movie.
There's three of them. There's Not Quite Human, Not Quite Human 2, and Still Not Quite Human. All three starring Alan Thicke.
Are they on the Disney Plus network?
Oh, you know what? They might be. I think they're like Disney Channel original movie sort of things, but like way back when.
This isn't like Smart House era.
I don't know if Disney Plus has those, but we've been watching. We watched Escape from Witch Mountain and Return to Witch Mountain.
Oh man, if the Not Quite Human movies are on there, watch them. I recommend them. They're not great, but they're fun. It's basically Alan Thicke makes himself a robot boy.
For what purpose?
To be his son.
Oh, okay.
It's like Small Wonder.
Yeah, and then the second one, there's a robot girl, and then the third one, Alan Thicke gets a robot replacement that's evil.
Small Wonder. Do you know where we saw that?
No.
We saw that, like, in a diner on vacation.
Yeah.
And it was, like, on TV, and it was, like, surreal.
And there was, like, robotics on her chest.
Yeah, but it was, like, I wasn't prepared for it. Like, we were, like, eating breakfast in the middle of nowhere, Georgia. And we were like, what is this sitcom? And we like had to look it up afterwards.
Oh my god. It's like I had a violent reaction like against that sitcom when it was on.
I don't know if I've seen Not Quite Human or The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, because I don't know the difference between those things. And I've seen
Not Quite Human is he's a robot. Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, he gets computer information in his head. He's a real person.
Okay. I have not seen either.
That's why he wears tennis shoes.
And The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, it's Kurt Russell.
Robots. Oh. Don't wear tennis shoes.
Didn't they also remake it with someone else?
They remade it with Kirk Cameron.
That's right.
Oh, that sucks.
I believe Not Quite Human is what I've seen, and I believe at one point I may have gotten confused and thought I'd seen the Kirk Cameron version of The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes.
Honestly, Vince, yeah. I'm glad you said that, because I was sitting here trying to remember which Joe was talking about.
The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, there was three of those movies. There were Kurt Russell playing Dexter Riley. There was The Computer Wore Tennis Shoes, The Strongest Man in the World, where he gets superpowers, and Now You See Him, Now You Don't, where he turns invisible.
God, you're such a fucking nerd.
This is what Doctor Who fans want to hear.
I'm just going to say, this is going to be the least popular version. This is going to be the least popular episode of Watchathon ever.
All of this stuff seems familiar to me, but vaguely. My memory is very reliable.
I fucking love the Dexter Riley movies.
We should.
I want Kurt Russell to do a new one now.
Someone's got to edit all this out.
what's going to be more popular with your listeners, Kirk Cameron or Dr. Actus accused of sexual assault?
Good point.
I'm curious what you're going to leave in.
I don't know. I don't understand our audience at all. So.
To be honest, no, I don't either.
Who listens to this garbage?
Question. Could the boy and not quite human jump up in the air and then disappear and reappear somewhere else?
No, but he did play the Human Torch in the 1994 Fantastic Four movie that got shit canned.
Got to get back on track. I need you to reel in this movie nerd bullshit right now.
2 a.m. in the morning here.
I was trying. I was segueing.
I know, but you made me talk about the 1994 Fantastic Four movie.
No one made you do anything. What happens next in Doctor Who?
Shada happens next. That's what happens next. Shada. We get an extended cut from Shada with a black triangle edited in post that scoops up Tom Baker and Romana.
I know it's not from this episode, really, but Romana's got a good outfit in it.
It's a great outfit.
Nice hat.
It's a great
hat. There's, like, fruit on her hat.
If you want to hear our thoughts on this scene, listen to our episode on Shada.
Oh, that's right. I've already talked about what a good outfit it is.
I really enjoyed watching that with you folks. It's funny because I watched it on my own first, but I enjoyed it much more when I watched it with you.
Aww. Nice.
Sometimes that happens. Like, I've seen movies twice and, like, I loved it the first time and then I watched it with a shitty crowd and I'm like, oh, I don't like it anymore.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. So
this is why it sucks that we can't go out to the movies anymore, but...
But we all got to watch The Five Doctors tonight, so that was
together.
Fun.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about it, kind of.
Fucking trying. Some of us are.
I don't remember anything.
So then Sarah Jane gets scooped at a bus stop, and she's the last one to get scooped. And Five completely passes out and starts fading in and out.
Like, Back to the Future.
Can we just point out that Sarah Jane does scooping acting before she's technically been scooped?
Does she?
Yes.
Yeah, she actually kind of starts waving her hands.
Oh, shit. We didn't talk about what she's wearing either.
Okay. Well, she's got a raincoat, and that's the first thing that really throws me.
It's a purple see-through raincoat.
And it's long.
It looks like a plastic poncho like you get, like... And like a bag or something. Like, it looks like...
It's a Blade Runner anorak.
So that's the first thing. And yeah. Then under that, she's wearing a doll's outfit.
It is a doll's outfit, 100%.
A pink suit, but this huge lace collar that just... And weird gloves.
Yeah, and lace cuffs, too.
The gloves are brown and woolen, but with lace cuffs. I don't know what that is.
I don't think they are lace cuffs. I think she puts them on and there's lace cuffs,
there's lace cuffs on the shirt.
There's lace cuffs on the shirt, yeah.
Her sleeves have lace cuffs.
Because there's less, later they hang off. And
that's
there's
less
no lace
atrocious.
On. There's
I do love that the gloves are like buttoned onto her shirt the way that mine were when I was like 6.
They just dangle.
Granted, I have ADHD. I could use it now. If all of my things were buttoned to me, that would be great. That would be great for me personally.
Yeah, me too.
I remember whenever I was at work while, you know, a pandemic was happening, like, we wouldn't wear masks when it was just, like, us and the dogs, but when clients would come, we would wear masks. And, like, I would always forget my mask unless I just left it hanging on my ear the entire time. So just for, like, 7 hours at a time, I would just have a mask hanging from one ear.
See, that's why I have either bandanas or I got that weird one that Ray got me that, like, it loops around your neck, but you can pull it down.
My mom made some, like, that had ear loop elastics, but then she made some that just had bigger loops that go around the back of your head. I like those because you can pull them up and down.
I like those for skating because when I'm skating outside and I'm 6 feet away from anyone, I'll take it down. And then when I'm, you know, you'll hit a group of people. You'll hit like a, and you'll pop it back up.
Why are you hitting people?
Because I do derby. No, I'm not hitting people and it's negatively affecting my mental health.
Speaking of interesting headwear, we go to Gallifrey.
It was me this time. I'm so sorry.
Did you hear my great segue there?
I loved it, and you did a good job, and I'm very proud of you.
Oh,
Gallifrey. We're on Gallifrey.
We're on Gallifrey.
The master is brought in to... There's like three of them. There's President Barusa. This is the fourth Barusa we've had.
It is. Every episode that's had Barusa, it's been a different actor.
And a different personality.
I was going to say, can we admire the fact that every time they recast Barusa, they cast another actor who looks even more bored than the last one to be playing the part?
This is true. The Deadly Assassin is still, like, my favorite Time Lord character. I don't even remember. I remember the Castellan, and like the Castellan in that is the only good Castellan, and he's got an accent of some kind, but he was good.
But yes, there's the President Barusa, there is the Castellan, and there is, I don't remember.
I think she's Chancellor Flavia.
Chancellor Flavor Flav.
Why not?
The Master says it, but he's like, Lord President, Castellan, Chancellor Flavia. Like he's flirting with her.
He does a lot of interesting things.
Can we just say how good Ainley is in this scene, actually? Because it's one of his best scenes. He's just, even the way just, I may be seated after he sat down. And he's just, he doesn't get scenes this good very often, to be honest, for a lot of his run. And it's a real shame, because when he's on it, and when he's so good.
Yeah, again, this is my first Master, so I recognize that Delgado was the original and a superior actor, but I do like, I have a soft spot for Ainley.
Again, I don't think it's Ainley's fault, because Ainley in this scene is good, and also in Survival, Ainley is quite good.
He's brilliant in Survival.
Yeah, it's down to the writing a lot of the time. Or directing, yeah.
They always really let him down in a way that Delgado wasn't quite let down.
It was a more consistent, kind of production team in the Pertwee era.
And plus in this scene, he gets to, I think it's this scene, it might be a later scene, I don't know. But in this, you know, talking to the Time Lords, he also gets to be a little bit gay for the Doctor, so that's good.
Oh, yeah.
He's like, a world without the Doctor? I can't imagine that. That would be so sad.
Scarcely bears thinking about.
I was watching this with my partner, and when it got to the point that she went, a world without the Doctor, but we're married.
best enemies.
Yes,
if people think that Missy was the first Master who was hot for the Doctor, actually no, I mean, I guess there was Sim had a lot of that too, but it's been consistent.
The Master has always been in love with the Doctor, but they're basically like, save the Doctor and we'll give you some new regeneration cycle, because I forgot that he stole that dude's body.
And he even refers to it when I think it's Pertwee says it's a new regeneration, he says sort of.
So then we get one wandering around the set of a Nickelodeon game show. Guts! That's what's going on. And then suddenly Susan is standing beside you. She just sort of wanders in and like, Grandfather, I thought you'd be here. Like, this is the reunion of the Doctor and Susan, presumably, because she looks older. There's no real like, where the fuck have you been, asshole? You took my fucking shoe!
Wasn't there a scene before they got plucked?
No.
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 No, not for her.
There was one of the Doctor, but not one for her.
But not for her. And this is presumably after she's been left on Earth. And he did take her shoe! I'm not over that! She only had one shoe!
She can get more shoes.
Alright.
In the chat, when we were watching this, at someone pointed out that since Susan never got scooped, it would be nice if actually this wasn't Susan. Because eventually there's other ones that are like tempting, like they're like sort of illusions and...
Oh, it was fake Susan all the time. I think that's too sophisticated.
that was actually the original plot. It was going to be One and Susan were both robots. There's going to be both of them.
Wow. Was that in Robert Holmes' version?
That was in Robert Holmes' version, yes. I don't think it was ever in Terrence Dick's version.
Who was going to be the Robert Holmes duo in the Robert Holmes version?
Yeah, that's what I need to know.
That's a good question. I don't know. It's just going to be One and One. So they reunite, and because they're reunited, there also has to be a Dalek who shows up. I'm pretty sure Terrence Dix has straight up said, like, yeah, I just put in all the stuff you'd want to see. And he's like, there's a lot of, like, we don't want to put this in there. And he's like, well, you gotta. Like, I think they were like, no K-9. And he was like, you gotta at least put in a scene of K-9. The kids love him. You may hate him, but...
You gotta put in one Dalek. But, like, having the Cybermen being sort of the, you know, there's a lot of Cybermen. They're so pointless in the story.
Well, they're pretty easily defeated by a putty.
From Power Rangers.
And then the Master getting them zapped with that chessboard, which still doesn't make sense.
I like the robot.
The robot is great.
I said the robot is both great and, like, if you think about it for 1 second, it's stupid. I think that the riff tracks really harped on how stupid it is.
Stupid and great.
I think the best things in Doctor Who, though, occupy that space.
Oh, 100%.
That is absolutely legit.
Where you're like, this is so stupid. I love it.
Again, I said in the chat, the robot has the same energy as the creepy little statue from the Daemons.
Yes.
Daemons?
I was just going to say, my favorite thing about the Cybermen in this is that there's a line at one point about how the Doctor knows something's up because they never used to bring the Cybermen in because they played the game too well. And you're like, how badly was everyone else playing this game? What were you using? Quarks? Yeah, right, they're rubbish. They just get slaughtered left, right, and centre, and they're like dead. I mean, don't get me wrong, Cybermen are always crap, particularly 80s Cybermen. It's part of their charm, but they're so bad in this. And it's like, yes, they're deadly hunters. I mean, really? Are they? Are you sure? Are they really good at this?
He also says, like, they don't pull them into the game because they're so dangerous. And he also says that the same thing of the Daleks. But in this scene with One and Susan and the Dalek, they just shove him into a wall and he shoots himself.
I have never seen a mirror before.
And he just gets so overexcited that he just shoots and the lasers bounce off and he blows himself
up. Also, presumably the killer robot they drag in all the time.
And he's not dangerous? He can fucking teleport and throw spears at you.
Here's the other thing about the robot. He's throwing spears, and like the way that it works, or the way that the effects works, is that it's kind of like he's like manifesting them out from his like robot self, right?
No, I think he's jumping back to
the
cave.
The thing that's wild to me, that he just has like a cave full of arrows and he's just going and getting them.
I always thought it was just supposed to be like a beam or something.
But then the Doctor grabs a bunch of spears and cables from his supply.
The cable and the spears are just like hanging up on hooks in his cave.
He's teleporting to go get them.
That's what, he's a robot. They should be inside his arms or something.
There is no room in that skin tight suit.
Didn't he also shoot lasers?
No, he doesn't.
No, I think it's all physical.
He shoots spears and he throws little disc things.
But so he's not like shooting them out of his arm. He's a robot. He's a robot and he's teleporting back home to get an arrow and chuck it at a guy each time. That's crazy. That's no way for a robot to be designed.
It's an extremely inefficient system.
But we see it be very effective.
I like it more now. I hadn't even realized this. This robot needs to return for like an arc.
I'm obsessed with this guy and all I want is for somebody to bring him back. What's his deal?
Terrence Dix did.
Terrence Dix. Did Terrence Dix use it in a novel?
The Eight Doctors.
Oh, I avoided The Eight Doctors like the plague.
I wouldn't recommend reading it at all, to be honest with you. But he does also have it set in the Eye of Orion, actually. It's all coming back to me.
No, it's funny. I read the Virgin New Adventures religiously, but at first when the BBC Books took it over, I wasn't going to read them at all. And then, you know, they started to get good, so I did. But I never went back to The Eight Doctors.
Really not missing much, as you do remember.
No, I learned throughout the, you know, even though I have a fondness for Time War and Exodus because it's so fan-wanky. Like, I learned that, the Terrence Dix novels were not among the better ones in the range.
I just want to know, who built this thing?
He built himself.
He built himself?
Sure, why not?
I just have so many questions.
Why hasn't Big Finish done a whole series about the Preston Warrior robots?
About just this guy. I have so many questions, and I demand that somebody answer them.
I'm sure some Doctor Who super fan can.
I will track them down. I will find them.
Call Ian Levine.
He does have a random cameo in that one episode of Watchmen.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. We just rewatched that. Lube guy.
Yeah, they were calling him Lube Ben. But no, here's the most important thing about this robot, though, is that the robot teleports. But, like, he doesn't just blink. He jumps in the air like a gymnast. Flying from trapeze to trapeze, like, or like a happy, excited, like, yay, like, or like, you know, at the very end of like the movie where they all jump in the air and freeze frame, like, that's what he's doing, and then he's disappearing.
That's the thing about calling it a putty, is because, like, that's how I remember them moving in Power Rangers, right? Where it's very like, we are jumping around and posing. It's very similar. It's not just the fact that it's like a weird suit faceless guy.
No, the movements are so like athletic and exaggerated.
And he jumps up and it goes boit! Like there's a sound effect that goes boit! And then when he comes back somewhere else, like a second later, he goes choo!
It's like he's jumping into a different dimension and then falling out of it. It's great.
I'm obsessed with this thing. is so good. I'm lost now. I don't even know
where we are.
Yeah,
this doesn't come up until like 20 minutes later.
I don't care. It's one of the most important things that happens in the serial.
I want to go back because where we're at now is we're talking about the Dalek.
All right.
I'm going to start a spinoff podcast called The Watchathon of That Fucking Robot. And it's just going to be about that robot.
We all know the Rasen Warrior robot is going to turn out to be the timeless child in the 60th anniversary.
Oh,
so.
Shit.
The Dalek that blows itself up. Is that the first time we've really fully seen a Dalek? Actual Dalek? No, I mean like the goopy guy.
Oh, I don't.
I know there's like a, in the first Dalek serial that you see like a hand.
What about in Genesis?
I feel like in Genesis you at least see them in their tanks, but maybe not like.
Yeah, we see them in the tank.
It is gross in this one, though.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's scary. It's like, it's a good effect.
Yeah.
This era, this Fifth Doctor era has been super gooey.
Oh, so gooey. Why is it so gooey?
Like the Dalek's like little spewing up pus all over the place. It's gross. But he also blows a hole in the mirror maze that reveals the Dark Tower of Rassilon that everybody's going to be heading towards.
I like how Susan says we're on Gallifrey because they're, you know, people had speculated whether Susan, like, is Susan really a Time Lord, or is she a regular Gallifreyan, or did the Doctor pick her up somewhere else? But, you know, she recognizes Gallifrey.
So she must be from Gallifrey.
That's a good point. Yeah. I didn't really, like, think about that, but that's a good point.
I also want to mention that for a brief moment, the Second Doctor and a Cyberman play tug of war using the brig.
God, and then Sarah Jane falls down the world's smallest hill.
That's the worst, but then, like, you know, Susan just, like, randomly tripping on a rock and getting a twisted ankle is almost as bad.
It's not even a rock, it's a bush.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a particularly difficult bush.
To be fair.
This terrain is treacherous.
To be fair, I've had my ankle just be a piece of shit for no reason. Where you're like, there was nothing, and you just folded under me for no reason. Thanks. Yeah.
But have you ever slightly fallen down a very small hill? I needed a car to pull you up.
I've never needed to wrap a rope around me to be pulled up from a hill like I could walk up, no.
She's far more injured, more likely to be injured by being pulled up by a car.
Yeah.
Dragged on stony ground.
To even say it's a hill is exaggerating. It's more like the road that they're on, you know, the paved roads that exist in the Death Zone are slightly, like, raised from the ground.
Why are they even paved roads there? Just so Bessie can drive.
It's for when the Daleks play.
From what I've gathered from watching the making of, the director and everybody got to this location where they were going to film it. And were like, shit. And tried to do the best they could. And he's like, I think I did the best I could with what I have. I know it's bad, but.
I mean, you know, I get that. Sometimes it's just like that.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're just like, fuck, okay. What are we doing? And then you do something and it's kind of bad, but it's okay.
Although, like, you would think that generally what would happen is a last minute rewrite.
You would think.
Right, it's like, it's not like Terrence Dix hasn't done that before.
Why not just, like, have
classic
Sarah
Joe.
She just appears there and
oh my god.
Three pile drives into her with Bessie.
Horrible!
Joe, I know that we wrote more than one book that suggests otherwise, but it's like really bad to be hit by a car.
Yeah, but
not
I mean,
if you
it's
go limp.
Yeah, you go limp.
Or maybe like, you know, the Doctor like stops short just before hitting her and she falls over.
Anything
and then she falls down
time.
A fall hill. Small hill. Did I just say she smalls down a fall
you
hill?
Did.
God.
That's called a spoonerism.
I taught my husband what a spoonerism was about a week ago. Because he has a podcast, he edits another podcast that friends of ours do, but the purpose of that podcast is to be drunk while discussing geeky things.
That sounds fun.
Oh, it's called But First, Let's Talk Nerdy. It's on the ESO Network. It's our friends, Brittany and Martha, who now live in Las Vegas. And yeah, one of them did a spoonerism. Yeah, Kevin just described it to me. I'm like, that's a spoonerism. He's like, what the fuck is a spoonerism?
For those who don't know, it's when you say words with a spoon in your mouth.
That is
no.
a spoonerism.
It's you take the first letters of each word and swap them. So, fall and small, small and fall.
Zach Sherwin has a song called Switch It Up that's full of spoonerisms. It's really good.
Brutes and fiends, fruits and beans.
We should move on.
Okay, so we get our first Doctor meetup. One and Susan find the TARDIS, and inside the TARDIS they find Tegan, Turlo, and Five. So One and Five are our first two who meet up with each other. And Five is, like, introduced to Susan, and he's like,
yeah, we've met.
That's it. Yeah, we've met. She's your fucking granddaughter.
Maybe have, like, an emotion about it.
Maybe. Just a little something.
She kind of, not flirty, but just kind of, like, looks at him like, ooh, you're cute.
No! That's bad. That is bad.
Look at this hot young thing.
Do not.
Susan is treated more like a companion than she is a relative, this whole thing. Meanwhile, the master gets a seal of the High Council. When he meets the doctor, he'll be like, can show him this and be like, see, I'm legit.
That is the cheapest looking shit.
I mean, it's the Rassilon seal.
It's the Rassilon seal with fake pearls around the edges.
That's like the Rassilon seal that they sell at the gift shop.
Yeah.
But he also gets a fancy cookie beeper.
It looks tasty. I was hungry the whole time.
It looks incredibly tasty.
They transmat him into the death zone where he just sort of wanders around looking at corpses and almost getting shot at. And very casually like, well, this isn't great.
I love how much of the death zone is just like an open field without even any trees or anything.
At least it's not a quarry.
It's not a quarry. But like the thing about quarries at least is that like...
there's some variety. There's some features.
There's features. There's stuff that could be behind you. You can like mess around. You can look around rocks or you can interact with the quarry or something.
Right. Whereas here, like when the Cybermen sneak up on them a couple times, they're clearly visible for like 2 minutes after they're 2 minutes before they're acknowledged by the characters.
Yeah. Cause everyone's just standing in an open like highlands or something. Like
The second doctor tells Brig a bunch of exposition while the third doctor tells Sarah Jane a bunch of exposition about how Time Lords were dicks. They used to scoop up people to fight in the death zone. And then like Rassilon either put a stop to it or was like the worst of all of them, basically, right? And this tower is his tomb.
Yeah, it's like only the third or fourth shittiest thing that the Time Lords have done, though.
The Master's like, oh, yes, I know about the Death Zone, your big secret. And all the Time Lords are just like, yeah, that's our secret. You got us.
That's the only one, yeah. You found us out.
Aw, shucks. I can't believe you caught our secret.
This isn't important at all, but I want to bring it up because I like it. There's a scene where One and Five are basically trying to figure out what they're going to be doing, and they're like, you know, divvying up the plans or whatnot. They're arguing because that's what happens when you put two doctors together. There is also an adorable moment where both One and Five both go, at the same time, and I love it so much. But while they're doing that, Tegan, Turlo, and Susan are just having like a little tea party.
Okay, but here's what's great about that. One to Tegan is like, make us some snacks. And Tegan's like, fuck off. So when she comes back with snacks, she just has snacks for her. And I respect that.
One does finally get one. And they spend like 3 minutes showing
it's
him eating one.
So long.
But he spends so much time
having one cookie.
You know, people turn up to mine unannounced. They get maybe a biscuit and a cup of tea. There's a whole fruit platter going on here.
I wonder if they still have the food machine that, or if the doctor still thinks they have the food machine that they did in the Hartnell era.
Or just like, yeah, that big machine that just does water and milk.
Yeah.
The water milk machine. You get like a little bit of both and you can get some 2%.
Meanwhile, the third doctor and Sarah Jane stop to pick up a hitchhiker that turns out to be the master. And then he's like, oh, never mind. Fuck this guy. Let's leave.
And they steal the seal, the Chinsey seal of Rassilon.
My favorite thing about the seal of Rassilon was that they made a new one in Time of the Doctor. And like they had to recreate this really chintzy looking prop and then shoot it in like HD in the middle of like this crazy like TARDIS set and stuff. And it's so funny.
I do like this, that like, Three is like...
he calls him his best enemy.
He does, but he's not believing him for a second. And he takes the seal of Rassilon and is like, you stole this and we'll be taking it back. So that like when Five finally meets up with him, he's like, I had a seal, but you took it from me already. But like Five's ready to believe him. Mm-hmm. Five's like, all right, what do you got? Like, let's hear it.
Five is the doctor who like the master barely has to hide for.
Like he dyes his hair. And he, like, has an anagram of his name.
For the third doctor, he'd have to make these really intricate masks that he would pull off. But no, not for five.
It's like, I am Sir Estram.
He puts on some Groucho glasses, and that's it.
I am Astermay.
Yeah.
Sarah Jane's like, we just can't leave him. And then three is like, watch me. And then drives off, and very slowly, and then I guess Betsy gets shot, like, by a laser. Where are these fucking lasers come from?
It's just, like, later, it's like, oh, see, now the car's messed up.
We see the master run off as lasers start shooting at him, but I think it's just a Death Zone feature.
Oh.
Just every once in a while, lasers.
Yeah, and then we see the effects of one having hit.
They became standard features of Death Zone after the 80s, like, in the 80s, like, maybe, like, 78, 79. Like, you get one of those, like, pre-79 death zones, like, you gotta put the lasers in. Also, there's more asbestos.
Which is actually a plus for a death zone.
Yeah.
I've been zoning out for a while now, so I don't know what anybody's talking about.
Death zoning out?
Yes.
We're basically saying that the Dark Heart at the Time of Society is asbestos use, I think.
Oh, we also forgot to mention, I guess, that Four is stuck. Right?
Oh, yeah. He's not really in this one. It's not important.
Yeah, he's stuck in a time eddy, right?
Yeah. It's not important. He's not in it.
I just want to establish why he's not in this.
Is that where Patton is?
Yeah, yes. That's where Patton is.
The Second Doctor theorizes that Rassilon might still be alive and might still be a dick.
Rassilon is definitely a dick.
And he says, we may be playing the game of Rassilon, which is available in stores now. Actually, that's the name of Ben Patton's podcast.
It is.
Cross promotion.
Did the action figures and the five-sided board come with the Game of Rassilon? Or do you have to buy those separately?
I really want them. Yeah.
They're really nicely designed.
They are.
All the doctors get one. All the companions get one. The master doesn't get one.
He does. Later.
Does he?
Like, way later.
No, he does. Yeah, there's a master on the board. When we finally go to the secret chamber, I think we see the master first. I don't think we see him get put on the board.
There's also a bit that I don't know if it's intentional or not, but there the inside the TARDIS, one and five are like doing stuff, and the TARDIS scanner picks up more doctors. One says it's focused on our brain patterns.
I think that's just like a self-correction. He realizes that, oh, yo, it's not just me. It would be kind to acknowledge the other me.
But it does also feel like a Hartnell flub.
It calls back to Hartnell's flub, so yeah, it's hard to say. I think it was maybe both.
I'm wondering if that was intentional or not.
Well, I mean, Two does the same thing later.
But he doesn't do it like in a flubbed way. Like, this sounds like a flubbed
line.
It's
a specific delivery.
Yeah, it's a delivery. Speaking of Two and Brig are just wandering around going into a cave, and Two is just singing a nursery rhyme.
And the Brig is not having it.
He's like, are you in pain?
Because I sure am.
I think it's interesting, the first time we hear about Rassilon, it's the Fourth Doctor, I believe, and he's like, who's Rassilon? Tell me more about Rassilon. But in this one, Two's like, hey, everybody knows about Rassilon. There's fucking nursery rhymes and shit.
The timeline's changed. It happens.
Wibbly wobbly.
Timey wimey. Five, Tegan, and Susan run into the master, and Five goes to talk to the master, and oh my god, they flirt so much.
So much. Oh my god.
They don't even, like, say anything useful. They're just, like, just flirting. That's all they're doing. And a Cyberman wanders into shot, like, oh shit, am I in the shot? Oh fuck, I'm sorry. And then leaves.
It's so awkward.
And then he goes and reports to the other Cybermen, like, hey, the doctor's over there. There's a bunch of people.
I left because I started to feel weird.
And then they go and attack them, knocking out the master and...
putting an end to the flirting.
But the doctor straight up steals the recall device from the master.
Still looks delicious.
The Cybermen are coming for him, and he says, sorry, mustache. I don't know why he mentions his mustache.
It's foreshadowing.
It's foreshadowing the mustache to come. But yes, he must dash and presses the button.
Oh, I see. You were doing some sort of pun.
I'm glad you picked up on that.
Somebody made a bunch of merch. I don't know if it's on, like, Redbubble or Etsy, where, like, they'd clearly only seen this serial and then, like, made a bunch of merch based on that line.
Oh my goodness. So, you're like, right. There's a thing that says, Thomas must dash. And there's a thing of the fifth doctor.
So, like, if it's on, like, a lunchbox and it says, must eat. And there's, like, a whole bunch of them.
And it's just different names. Sophie, must eat.
Like, yeah, because they've decided that that is his catchphrase or something.
That's his catchphrase. And so they just made a bunch of... I'm trying to find the original.
Oh, this is the same store that did a bunch of stuff like that, right? This is, like, an official BBC store?
I think it might be.
I think
it is. It's not loading and it's driving me crazy.
No, it has all kinds of, like, different doctors. Who like are for different eras, and they're all like slightly wrong. It feels like a choice almost.
Thomas mustache, Sophie must eat. I don't understand it.
Well, just search mustache merch. I don't, my laptop's not loading it.
I saw this on Twitter, and like it was some weird, somewhat official site.
So like, there's a towel that says must dry. There's a lunchbox that says must eat. And it's like, they're all personalized, so they have names. There's a pillow that says, must sleep. So, like, somebody watched this and was like, that's the Fifth Doctor's catchphrase, and made all this merch for it. Oh, you found the original. Okay, this is the Twitter that I saw, which was from the Sisterhood. Oh, you went away from it. Yeah.
Sisterhood underscore Karn.
And, like, they posted all these things. Did they link to the store that they're from?
They did not.
But they're all personalized, so they have, like, they just have, like, a name.
Eldrad, must live.
But yeah, and it's for a whole bunch of doctors, but they're all like slightly off.
This isn't super important, and I feel bad for derailing the podcast, but it was really weird.
No, they were really weird. You were correct.
And like watching when he said mustache, I was like, oh, this is where the weird merch comes from. I was like really excited because I had seen this Twitter thread before. Anyway, I'm sorry. What happens next?
The doctor uses the recall device and gets out of there and goes to the Gallifrey place. And then Susan trips over a bush.
And hurts her delicate ankle.
The master wakes up. The Cybermen are like, you're not the doctor. And he's like, you're right. I'm your servant. I work for you guys now. Totes on board with you guys.
Why they call me the master.
You're just stealing Chris's jokes
right
now.
In front of her, too.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck. Go on. I got more. What do you want? What do you need? You think I feel threatened by you? I'm over here on Twitter trying to find the shop.
Tegan and Susan go back to the TARDIS, and Susan props her ankle up, and they fill in one Interlo about what's going on, and the First Doctor decides to go to the tower, and Tegan's like, I'll join you. And he's like, fine. He looks so disgusted by this idea.
Does he?
He does. He's like, okay.
I mean, he can't do facial expressions, so...
And then the Doctor, meanwhile, starts telling the Gallifrey people, like, I have this theory.
The Time Lords.
Nope, Gallifrey people.
The Gallifrey people.
I'm sorry. He talks to the Time Lords and says that he thinks that... Basically, he's like, I think a high-ranking Time Lord is using the Time Scoop. Whoever is doing this, whoever's behind all this, because it's not the Master, also used the recall device that the Master had as a tracker for the Cybermen. They're in cahoots with the Cybermen. And he opens up the cookie, and indeed there is a homing beacon inside of it. And then everybody's like, must be the Castellan, right? Susan and Turlo have a plot line that is so bare bones. They just stand around and watch a screen as the Cybermen slowly put up a bomb around them, and they do fucking nothing.
They're watching it like, huh, that seems bad.
There's literally a bit where she's like, oh no, what do we do now? And Turlo just goes, die? So dramatically. And that's it. They don't even try to save themselves.
That's a real Turlo response.
He did try to kill himself in Enlightenment. And then that's when the Rastan scene happens. But we talked about that. He just brutally murders Cybermen. He does that, like, sword slashing off the head thing, too.
Oh my god, he does!
One of the Cybermen throws up.
Does it?
Yeah, it just spews out stuff out of its mouth.
Oh my god.
Cyber vomit.
Precious bodily fluids.
It is legitimately brutal, too. It's actually pretty good.
You know that scene's actually directed by John Nathan Turner.
Really?
Not by Peter Moffat. Yeah, he went off to do a lot of the shot, you know, just like secondary fill-in stuff and ended up shooting that, apparently.
Well, kudos. It works.
It's the logic of someone going, okay, lads, this is the 20th anniversary. You want to celebrate this program. Do we need to see a Cyberman throw up and be decapitated? And I'm like, Yeah, that's what Doctor Who's all about.
Definitely.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Here's how it would have been better.
Okay.
I love the robot. I get the robot. And I feel like the only reason the Third Doctor has the plotline he currently has is because he's never had a Cyberman story. Hmm. But he doesn't do anything with the Cybermen.
Doesn't even talk to them, does he? Just runs away.
No, he's just like watches them and like, oh, they're getting murdered. I don't even know who these guys are. And then leaves. The way they should have done, get rid of the robot and have the Third Doctor brutally murder a bunch of Cybermen.
I mean, that'd be cool.
Do the exact same thing, but just have the Third Doctor do it.
You say with Venusian Aikido. Is that what you say this is missing? Who does that? Hi-ya!
Yes.
No, just give him some energy bolts. Let's give him some spears or whatever the fuck. I assume that this robot is sort of like Thor and like is throwing thunderbolts.
I mean, was Terry Walsh available to put on a wig and pretend to be John Pertwee? They could have definitely done it.
They bring in a box, the box of Rassilon, casket I think they call it, that they found in the Castellan's room. It was under his bed next to his magazines. And it's full of black scrolls that just prove he's bad, I guess.
They're like the black scrolls of Rassilon or something. Or the Death Zone or some nonsense.
And then they set him on fire or they catch fire by themselves. I'm not certain what happened there.
I think they're so evil they just burn up by themselves.
And then they take Castellan away and they're going to mind probe him. And
not the mind probe?
Either the worst line reading in the history of Doctor Who or something's going on. He says, no, not the mind probe.
Apparently they did many takes of that and that was the best
no
one.
Way. Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah, apparently he just could not get it.
Wow. Has he never been like afraid in his life, you think?
No, not the mind probe. I don't know.
Oh no. Not the mind probe.
I can't imagine how bad the other takes were.
I want
this
to
is
see
the one
that.
I want to see every single one of them.
You can see some of them on the documentary on the DVD. Okay. So
my headcanon is that when Rusa says use the mind probe, that means take him out and shoot him and pretend that he tried to escape. And the Castellan knows that that's what's going to happen to them. So there is no mind. There is no mind probe. That's just code for shoot him and make it look like he tried to escape.
Interesting. Either way, no, not the mind probe.
Yes, no, not the mind probe.
Everyone should go around and do one.
No, not the mind probe. Tony?
No, not the mind probe.
Vince?
No, not the mind probe.
Adam?
No, not the mind probe.
Felicity, have you already done it? I don't remember. I'm so drunk.
No, not the mind probe.
That was excellent all around. Congratulations to everybody.
Listeners, send in your own version of yourself saying, no, not the mind probe, and we'll post our favorites on Twitter.
Sure, why not?
The Second Doctor and the Brig are chased by a Yeti for some reason.
Because I love them and I'm so glad they're back.
They made a new fuzzy chicken nugget for like 5 seconds of screen time.
My little fuzzy chicken nugget boy is back.
I couldn't even get a face. I was trying to get like a face to see what they did with the face. I couldn't tell.
They don't have faces.
They don't.
No, they just got fur.
That's the chicken nugget part.
But they had something. They had eyes. Didn't they used to have eyes?
No.
I think they had eyes in their second appearance, but not their first.
You know how chicken nuggets famously don't have faces?
Fuzzy faceless chicken nuggets.
They defeat him with literally with glitter, right? He calls it like space glitter or something. I don't remember. Something weird.
No. He chucks a thing at him that explodes.
I know, he calls it a glitter bomb or something.
It's firework.
What?
Yeah.
No, he calls it a galactic missile.
He calls it galactic glitter, I think is what it is. I'm going to look up the transcript right now because it's...
I'm almost certain he says missile.
Let's see.
We all just watched it, though.
It's a galactic
glitter.
It's
a galactic glitter.
He calls it a galactic glitter.
That's what the transcript says, I guess. It's a firework.
Because 2 does that thing that the Doctor does where he just pulls shit out of his pocket. I believe he takes something out of his pocket, looks at it, and then shoves it into the Briggs pocket at one point, too. Which is always delightful.
Yeah, that is excellent.
It blows up, and then it just makes the Yeti mad. But then, a convenient avalanche falls on top of the Yeti. But also, inconveniently, blocks them in. But then they conveniently find a door.
I love the Brigadier's line here. He goes, you've maddened it!
Also, going by the door they discover, ancient Gallifreyans were all about 4 foot high.
I Right?
Yeah, I think that like the door on the roof that Pertwee finds is kind of small too.
And angled, I believe. It's like a cellar door sort of thing. Then One and Tegan get to a gigantic door. A huge door, the complete opposite of this 4-foot door, and they have to solve an elaborate puzzle of pressing a button underneath a bell to get in.
I assume maybe it's like coded to Time Lord DNA or something like that. I don't know.
Meanwhile, Three lassos onto a tower and ziplines over with Sarah Jane.
That is aggressively Three.
But at the same time, I don't think that ever happened in Three's run.
No, but if you had to pick like a doctor who was ziplining.
Exactly. Like, but that's what's kind of cool about it, is that, like, it feels like a classic Three thing while being actually technically a new thing.
He's the James Bond action doctor.
And then Sarah Jane again has to pretend that she's not standing on the ground. But this is actually a little more believable, that she's, like, climbing onto the tower. This I buy more than the small hill.
And Three seems so annoyed that she's having difficulty.
Like, come on, there's a foothold there, pull yourself up, like, let's go.
She's holding on to, like gloves or something, like, with both hands.
It's a loop of wire.
And, like, he needs her to, like, hold on to them with one hand so he can take her hand. And she's like, one hand, just hold on, one hand, hold it, one hand.
It almost feels like Pertwee was annoyed, like, come on, we just need to finish filming this scene. Please, we've been here all day. Stop milking this, God.
She's like, they give me a little screen time while they know who I am. I'm Sarah Jane fucking Smith.
I will say, I feel like Sarah Jane is more whiny in this serial than she is normally.
Right.
Yeah, it's not a great characterization of her. I think Terrence is probably mostly focused on getting the doctors right, which, to be fair, he really does.
And I think, like, Terrence is much more used to, like, Terrence did write Sarah Jane, but he was also more used to writing Joe. And, like, despite the fact that, like, Sarah Jane is, like, introduced as being kind of, like, feminist character, like, I think, like, that was always a little bit of a joke in her first season.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Mm.
And it's not really until later where Sarah Jane really just kind of feels like a really active character.
Yeah, and her dynamic with Pertwee is different. You know, her dynamic with Tom Baker, you know, they really settle into, you can believe they're good friends, and they take the piss out of each other, and she totally doesn't hold him on a pedestal or anything like that.
And I think Terrence Six is just more used to writing that thing.
Yeah, he reverts to 70s roles.
Then the next scene is One and Tegan get a very First Doctor scene, but that also doesn't really make any sense whatsoever. There is a checkerboard that they have to get past.
And there's plenty of room on the sides of it.
To walk around it.
There's some bits of scenery, like the wall is like a shape, but like you can walk around those bits.
So the whole, like the way that it plays out, right, is that like the master knows there's like a secret path to go on this checkerboard floor so it doesn't zap you a bunch.
Right.
And the master knows it. And he tricks all the Cybermen into going across it the wrong way and they die. And he
shoots one of them because
he doesn't get tricked. But he tells the doctor that it's easy as pie. And so the doctor's like, oh, 3.14, whatever. I don't know any more than that. So presumably it's like you do the third tile, then the first tile, then the fourth.
But it changes every time, and I think it's just meant to be, yeah, it's lip service to math. It's like, you need to use pi to calculate what the correct path is every time.
And the First Doctor just goes across in a straight line anyway.
Which is the thing that the Master does the first time, and then he plays hopscotch on the way back. So it's a badly directed scene.
It could make sense with blocking, is what drives me crazy.
Again, it's one of those moments where they went, 20th anniversary, what story should we pay tribute to? Do you remember Death of the Daleks? Oh, yeah, let's do that bit again.
Do you remember one of the worst cliffhangers ever?
Oh, no, the floor. And it's the same color, too. It's red and white.
Yeah, yeah.
I blocked that out.
The thing is, it feels like they're trying to make the floor much more complicated. They're like, the problem with the floor the last time was that it didn't have enough rules. Like, yeah, we're going to do the floor because it's fun, but like this time we're going to make the floor cool.
Then the next scene we basically get is Three bumps into Yates, Mike Yates.
Your nemesis.
My nemesis. Never, always Benton, never Yates. Also Liz Shaw, which I'm actually down for.
Yeah.
Yo, she was great.
Always down for Liz Shaw.
But it was never Yates.
That's true. It wasn't Yates. It was, it's an illusion. Ooh. I'm a little bummed that they both don't have like a, they're very tiny roles and they're also not themselves.
Yeah. But you know, they're there. That's, it's, that's nice.
It's also really, it actually is legitimately creepy, though.
It's creepy when they do it, and it, but it's just bizarre when Jamie and Zoe do it.
The actress who plays Liz Shaw is so good at turning on, like, a sudden, like, alien scream thing. She makes this alien noise, and, like, she's so good at it.
She's like, stop him! Then, the next scene is Jamie and Zoe doing literally the exact same scene. I think those weren't in Terrence Dick's scripts. I think they were actually written by J&T, like last minute.
Oh, so J&T screwed it up.
He's like, we gotta squeeze these actors. Yeah. Yes, and this scene is the scene that sort of starts the season 6B madness. Also, Zoe is wearing bubble wrap.
But it's a good look, if we're being honest.
It's a great look.
She did have some weird futuristic kind of fashion in her time, but yeah, it's bubble wrap.
It's a subtle tribute to the Ark in Space.
It's like a blue dress.
It's even stupider looking than Sarah Jane's transparent Blade Runner raincoat.
Jamie's got a nice outfit too. Very low cut.
It's very vampire, to be honest.
Exactly, or pirate. I was gonna say it's kind of piratey.
Yeah,
a vampire pirate. But they're like, don't come any closer. If you come any closer, things will cease to exist or something. I don't remember. They're just trying to scare him away. And then he's like, fuck y'all guys. And then walks through them. That's exactly what he said. They scream.
Right. They just go, ah.
Yeah. What is so intimidating when the first two did it is so unintimidating when the second people did.
And then there's a great joke where the second doctor's like, this is the way we gotta go, and blah, 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 blah. And he's talking to the Brig, and he's like, have I ever led you astray? And Brig goes, on many occasions.
It's like, well, this'll be the exception. Which is kind of, that's the dynamic that makes Two and the Brig so good, so fun to watch.
Meanwhile, the fifth doctor's in this serial.
Oh, yeah.
Well, first of all, he goes to see Barusa, and the guard tells him that the Lord President has been in his chambers, but the doctor goes in and he's not. It's empty.
And then he just starts snooping around that room and then sees the harp and starts messing around with it. And it is the harp of Rassilon, of course. It's not just a harp. It is the harp of Rassilon. It's going to take him like 5 more scenes before he actually does anything with it, though.
Why?
Gotta pat this thing out.
Gotta keep harping on.
Yeah.
Finally, people start coming together. One and Tegan enter the tomb of Rassilon, shortly followed by Three and Sarah Jane, then the second doctor and the Brig. They're all there, and they all sort of like are like, hey, what's up? And meeting each other, and it's very cute and adorable. Tegan meets Sarah Jane, and like, I don't know. Like, this whole scene, this should have happened at the beginning. Mm-hmm. I would have liked to have seen them together through more of this instead of just sort of saving it for the end. But it's nice now that they have finally all sort of started meeting each other.
It's honestly, as fun as it is to watch doctors like bounce off of each other or whatever, it's more fun to watch companions meet each other.
Because they can commiserate.
School reunion.
Right, yeah, one up it. Yeah, I think of Rose and Sarah Jane trying to one up each other.
It's more fun, I think, because there's more chance of, like, shit-talking the doctor, which the show constantly needs more of.
And it's also, like, as different as, like, the doctors are, they're all still sort of the same person and have sort of the same perspective. Whereas, like, all the other, like, companions get to have a little bit more specific perspectives. Their interactions are so much more believable. Also, just because, like, we're used to seeing people, like, friends of friends meeting each other for the first time. That's a thing that feels natural, whereas, like, we're not used to people meeting their past selves.
What are you talking about? I meet my past self all the time.
This is something that I think about constantly. I just recently went through, like, a bunch of old notebooks, and I literally have, I went to my mom's, and I came back, and I had, like, a notebook from 5 years old, 10 years old, like, literally every 5 years. And so, like, every time we watch, like, a multi-doctor story, I'm imagining that it's like you're hanging out with like 20-year-old you and 15-year-old you and 10-year-old you. And like, what would that be like?
And it's like reading your old shitty journals.
It's like reading your old shitty journals. And guess what? You're a fucking mess.
I will say, we mentioned this briefly earlier, I'm kind of like in between, in the middle about Twice Upon a Time. But that is the thing that Twice Upon a Time captures well, is the feeling of like, oh God, I used to suck. Oh my God, I said some problematic shit.
It's also, I mean, what I do like about it is it's like, yeah, oh God, I used to be such a sexist, and oh, now I'm a woman.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
Yeah, I think Twice Upon a Time works conceptually pretty well, but like, it just sucks that it kind of has to come at the expense of the First Doctor's characterization a little bit.
Yeah, same. That's where I am with it.
One of the problems for me is I do not like Mark Gatiss as an actor. The one time he's worked for me is Mycroft in Sherlock, but like every other time he just takes me right out of something. So I'm like, oh, it's Mark Gatiss. I don't know why. And I didn't like what they did with Bill either.
But to be fair, I feel that way about his scripts sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
He's not my favorite writer either.
I was not a fan of the idea of taking the concept of death and going, oh, yeah, that's not a thing.
Did it do that? Did I miss that?
I mean, that's exactly what's happening.
Well, it sort of is, because it's like, oh, yeah, everybody who ever died, we store them. And it's, no.
But it's their memories, it's not them. Sorry, this is not the Twice Upon a Time podcast, and it's 3 o'clock in the morning here, so I can't get into this now. I can't.
It is them, though, because they are their memories, and that's the point.
Well, I don't think it is at all. They're ghosts. They're not memories, they're ghosts. It's a ghost story. Twice Upon a Time is a Victorian ghost story. It's my hot take.
I think it cheapens the death.
It's my 3 a.m. hot take. It's a Victorian ghost story about a man surrounded by his memories. Memories don't cheapen death.
You guys can have a separate discussion about this later.
I don't want to have a discussion now. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I don't want to have a discussion about it.
We're so close
to
the end here.
We're so close to being done.
We gotta focus.
I'm barely awake.
So the doctors all get together around this big rock that's got some writing on it.
You used to edit that show.
What show?
The Doctors.
Oh, I did used to edit The Doctors, the soap opera. Chris, what the fuck are you doing?
We are so close to the end here.
So they get around the rock. They're all like bickering and one-upping each other. And like, I love this. Like, they'll be like, oh, I'm the only one who can solve this. And there's like definitely bits where they're like, okay, but what is this bit? And they're like, you explain that one. We all know, but you explain that bit. But they basically read the rock, which says whoever wins will lose and whoever's the loser will win. Sort of, there's all this nonsense on it. I mean, that makes sense later. But my favorite part is when two is like, there's a bit on here that says, if you've made it this far, we're all very brave.
We're all very brave and smart. So everyone feel very good about yourselves.
And then like Tegan and Sarah Jane like look at each other and are like, hey, we did it.
One of the things that I love about them reading this rock, and to be fair, you don't see all of the rock, but it really seems like they're reading a lot of stuff on this rock that seems to have about as many characters on it as like a tweet, and like an old tweet. Not even like a 280 character tweet, like a 140.
Why is the TARDIS not translating?
Because it's old. Hi, Gallifreyan.
It's old.
It's old as balls.
Speaking of the translation, when they were on the checkerboard, there was a play on words with pi, easy as pi, and then it was pi, the number. The statement was made by the master, and the doctor understood it. I think it was Tegan who did not get that there was a distinction between pi and pi in the statement, but the doctor did, and my headcanon is that the doctor understood because the master was speaking Gallifreyan, and he was hearing it in Gallifreyan. So there's no pun in Gallifreyan. He was not making a pun. It just became one in the English translation of it.
That's a really fun idea. He does seem like he's figuring it out, though.
Yeah, he said easy as pie, and then he says the Greek letter pie.
But like, he's like, the Greek letter pie. Like, it seems like he's discovering it. But I do like that idea.
Have we ever seen the TARDIS translate written text? Like, it's not going to suddenly appear, like, look like English.
Presumably it is. Because lots of times we're on alien planets and reading text. Like, you don't think about it, but, like it usually is.
I think it's definitely been shown in New Who at some point, I feel like.
Yeah, it has.
Oh, yeah. Hello, sweetie.
But I feel like I don't think it's been established in Classic Who at all.
Although I will say, in that same episode, there is something written in Old High Gallifreyan that is untranslatable, and the TARDIS does not translate it.
It is kind of weird that the TARDIS translates text, given that it doesn't it work with like brainwaves and stuff.
Yeah,
yeah, it's like it's the telepathic circuits.
Are there brainwaves stored into the text?
No, it's the brainwaves of the person.
It's
reading
like you reading
it.
The text.
I don't know.
It's interpreting that.
The TARDIS is basically translating in your head.
Oh, okay.
Like it's transmitting the translation to you.
So it's not taking it from the source.
It's more like a filter. It's a translation filter.
So also on this rock is talk of an immortality ring, the ring that'll grant you immortality, and that's what people presumably travel here for. And then the master comes in and is like, great, I'll take that, thank you, and points his dildo at everybody.
Oh, no.
He's so petulant in this as well. He's so like, I was trying to be nice, and you were nasty to me, and I really annoyed about that.
I thought we were boyfriends.
I'm looking forward to destroying you three times.
And then the brig just punches him in the face.
It's great.
It's really good.
Yeah, it's like a Duggan move from City of Death. The answer is punching.
It's something that I feel like the brig deserves.
Yeah.
Just one time, he got to punch the bad guy, and that was it.
And it worked. The master is effectively out of this story, effectively.
He got to solve one problem with violence, and I'm happy for him.
Also, the master makes a glorious face as he's falling to the ground. It's just like, whoa! It's great. I love it. Okay, the doctor finally plays the Harp of Rassilon, which he's like, if only there was some sort of, I don't know what to play. And he like leans up against the painting that is directly behind the harp that has sheet music in the painting. And then he does like a really good double take. And then plays the sheet music. Like, that's a shitty puzzle. Like, you just put the solution, like, right there. I seriously don't know how people didn't accidentally do it. Because if I knew how to play a harp, and I came in, and there was a harp in front of a painting that had sheet music
in
it.
Oh, yeah, that's your first instinct.
Exactly. But it opens the painting, and he walks into it like Mario in Super Mario 64. Actually, no, he doesn't go through the painting. That'd be cool, though.
Yeah, it's a door, a secret door.
And it opens up into the toy room where all the little action figures are, and it's where the scoop is, presumably. And also, Barusa, he's our bad guy.
And he's wearing a snazzy crown of wrestling.
Still looking bored.
He's also in like a really black bad guy outfit.
Oh yeah, he's definitely in his bad guy suit.
And he wants to be President Eternal. He never wants to be kicked out of his job as president, which seems relevant. I'm sorry. I don't know how I feel about this. I know Barusa has never been like a great guy, but it feels a little weird making him just full on bad. I don't know.
I mean, I think, you know, Time Lord society has always been kind of screwed up and corrupt. And this is, I think, it's just meant to illustrate, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely.
I was going to say, I think it's also at this stage, they've had a different actor play Barusa every time. I don't think anyone cares about Barusa at this stage particularly.
Yeah, I can never in my life remember, like, a continuity of Barusa. It's been so long since we've seen Barusa or whatever. Although, I guess, really hasn't been that long, because Arca and Vinny is not that long ago, but it's a different actor, right?
Yeah, all four times he's a different actor, so...
But he didn't have anything to do in Arca and Vinny.
Every time I watch one, I'll be like, oh, I guess it's the same actor, because they all look alike to me.
None of them are distinctive.
They're all, like, cast, like, the same.
But I think it's meant, perhaps, that, you know, maybe 100 years passes between each time the Doctor visits... And it's a new regeneration. Or Barusa keeps falling down the stairs or something. I don't know.
So, yeah. Anyway, he's full-on bad guy. I actually kind of like this scene, especially where he's, like, talking about, like, putting everybody in there. And, like, it's a game within a game. I like that line delivery a lot. I don't know. It's very
It's kind of goofy.
It's goofy, but I like it. I don't know.
No, yeah. I think he delivers the goofy well.
Why did he bring all the doctors in it? What's the reasoning? I don't remember.
The idea is that the doctors will trip all the traps.
Yeah, they'll solve the puzzle for him and he can stroll in at the end.
That makes sense.
Because if he could do it himself, he would have done it 200 years ago.
Well, really, just don't put a fucking
death zone
guy in a silver suit in your death zone And then it's pretty much just dodge the lasers. Walk around the chessboard of doom, and you're done. But Sarah Jane and Tegan tie up the master. Three fusses with some stuff that's going to pull the TARDIS into the tomb. And of course, it does that by reversing the polarity of the neutron flow.
Yeah, I think there was basically like a force field or something that was preventing the TARDIS from materializing there.
And so they do that and effectively solve the Cyberman bomb problem by transporting the TARDIS to the tomb as soon as the Cybermen blow up the bomb. Because it took them this entire episode to set it up.
Very ineffectual.
So and then the bomb goes off. And it looks like the TARDIS explodes for like a half second, but that is immediately shot down by just Susan and Turlough being like, we did it! Or they did it. We didn't do anything.
We have solved your Cyberman bomb puzzle.
The neutrons are now reverse neutral. And they're flowing in the opposite direction of standing still.
And then Barusa mind controls the doctor with the coronet of Rassilon and makes him bow. Follow him around. Two calls in to the Capitol. Like, hello? Is anybody there? I'm the doctor. What's up?
Other me's.
And he has a chat with Five, who is very clearly possessed. And is like, don't leave. Don't do anything. Don't touch anything. We'll be there soon. And Two's like, that checks out.
Well, Two doesn't know Five yet.
Yeah, but the first doctor and the third doctor are both like, that's hella suspicious. And Two's just like, ah, that's just like you, third doctor. To be so suspicious.
Well, one has already met Five, so that makes sense.
Right, three hasn't, though.
Three's just quicker on the uptake.
He's like, I know when someone's being mind-controlled.
I saw it all the time with Joe.
Two is just like, you do you, man. I'm gonna be that one day. I'm gonna like it.
I guess future me is just kind of a monotone dude.
It's gonna be weird. Can't wait to find out what it feels like.
So then Barusa and Five transmat in. Barusa freezes the companions, which they all hold their pose pretty good when they do that. And then he comes for the doctors, and the band's all together now, and they all, like, Barusa's trying to mind control all of them, but they all, you know, mind link together and break free of Barusa's mind control.
And they bring the fifth doctor out of it, too.
And they're like, we're stronger together!
Oh!
Imagine how much stronger they would have been if they had Tom Baker.
And then Rassilon calls in. You've made it. You've won. Come collect your prize. And he's just a floating head with blue and red lights flashing over him. And he's in this tomb, by the way, we forgot to mention.
With a great mustache. Yes, I do want to get that out there.
The mustache.
The mustache of Rassilon.
The mutton chops of Rassilon.
His head is floating over the body of Rassilon, who's just a corpse.
Sure.
On top of a bed that has three faces on it. But there's four slots.
Yeah, we notice that the tomb is decorated with, like, Time Lord busts with their headdress.
And it's weird, because it's like, there's four slots, but the third one is empty. Why did they skip that one, you think? Wouldn't you go 1, 2, 3?
1, 2, 3, and then the fourth one would be blank.
Well, I don't know.
Fair enough.
I can't retcon this. I don't know. I can't call Big Finish.
That just destroys the whole reality of this entire episode.
Yeah, this whole, everything that's come before this is bullshit now.
I will say, they do say that they have prepared a space for him.
So they just kind of scooched over?
Yeah.
There'll be some around the other side of it as well. We just don't see those ones. They're not in shot, so.
Yeah, they like moved some people around.
They only had three plastic masks.
Barusa says that the doctors are on his side or whatever. And then like 5, 2, and 3 are all like, fuck no, we're not. And then one's like, nah, we definitely are.
Yeah, yeah.
That Barusa guy, he's the best. He deserves this win. Then Rassilon's like, all right, cool. Get your immortality ring. Just take it off my dead finger there. So Barusa does, puts on the ring, and then he gets immortality by living inside of the fucking, the busts. He becomes one of them on the tomb. And like, it's really creepy. Like, it just shows
the
like their eyes
move.
Their faces move a little bit, too. Like, it's underneath the... Oh, it's creepy.
The stone face turns into, like... It's a human face under, like, one of those transparent masks. So it just looks... And you can... Yeah, you can see their faces moving. It's actually... You know, it's a low-tech, but actually pretty effective solution.
It's the Catherine Madison fate.
From the episode of Buffy? The one with the witch. I think it's called Witch.
The Witch.
It's called Witch or The Witch. I'm not sure which.
It's called the Witch.
If you want to go like a Doctor Who route, then Barusa becomes like that character in Love and Monsters. Mm-mm. Do you think Barusa still has a love life? Rassilon asks the doctors if they want immortality, and they all adorably are just like, no, thank you, no. Thanks, but no. Two hides behind three during that.
I love that.
And then Rassilon's like, cool, sends the master away. I don't know where to.
Also, is Rassilon wearing like a Mongolian helmet or something?
It's definitely like a Asian type of quality to his costume.
Yeah, it's a interesting choice.
Like the Celestial Toymaker reminded me of a little bit.
Yeah, I was thinking like they want to give up like a Genghis Khan feel.
Oh, yeah, that's a good call.
Which is weird.
It's weird.
It's a white guy.
Yes, of course.
It's odd when you consider Aslan's going to regenerate into Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton was regenerated from...
Roger Moore.
Roger Moore, thank you.
It would have been so great. I said this when they recast Rassilon. They should have recast it as Pierce Brosnan. I remember saying that. Like, I wanted that to happen so bad. Like, it never was going to happen, but it would have been such a great joke.
They kind of did that with the Cornetto trilogy, right? I mean, not a regeneration, but they just used progressive Bond villains from Hot Fuzz, Timothy Dalton, to Pierce Brosnan in World's End.
Totally didn't pick up on that.
Everybody's going to go home now.
Oh, is the podcast over?
Hooray!
Yeah.
Very close. Very
Get
close.
Out. Goodbye.
I had that same thought, unironically.
So the doctors all bicker. They all say their goodbyes, and it's very cute, and I like it a lot. And then they all get into the TARDIS, and then multiple TARDISes just start shooting out of the TARDIS.
I think in the special edition, they do something different because they realize that this makes no fucking sense.
I think they use the swirly effect, the fabric thing, the time scoop effect.
I think I can bullshit up a way to make sense of it.
Okay, do it.
Okay, so the TARDIS is, while it is dematerializing, it is moving back in time a little bit, like a second, over and over again to make like time copies of itself. Because like if you travel back in time a couple of seconds, there's another you there from a couple seconds ago, right? So the TARDIS is doing that, but in the same spot while dematerializing, so that it can be in the same spot at multiple points in time at the same time. So it is overlapping its own timeline in order to create multiple copies of itself, and meanwhile putting the people inside of the separate TARDISes, in similarly to how in the episode Blink, how the TARDIS materializes around the people so that the people end up inside the TARDIS. So it's doing that, but the people are moving from inside the TARDIS to inside the TARDIS and being sort of shuffled and separated and sent to their respective times and spaces.
I buy that.
What?
But that means there's like 8 TARDISes out there now.
Yeah, because sort of, there's some other TARDISes that are just hanging around.
Right, the Third Doctor and Sarah Jane aren't going back to the same spot in time, nor are the Brigadier and the Second Doctor. But I like it. I think it's cool.
What makes the most sense is that thing, but actually all the other TARDISes that have been left in various points around the death zone or whatever, as one is phasing out, another one is phasing in.
Or when 3 reversed the polarity of the neutron flow and pulled the TARDIS into the tomb, he pulled all the TARDISes in.
Oh.
Yeah, they're all superimposed on each other.
Like in Legopolis, one materializes around the master's TARDIS.
There's also a possibility we're thinking about this too much.
The master just disappears, so this... Right, the most logical thing would be for the time scoop to put them all back, or whatever happens to the master. But Rassilon's a powerful dude.
4 just gets put back into Shada.
In a different point in Shada, which is funny. I think also in the special edition, they just put him right back on in the boat.
Yeah, I think they do.
There's also, I also want to say there's a great line where, there's a couple of great lines. First off, 2 calls 3 fancy pants, and 3 calls 2 a scarecrow. Then there's a bit where 3...
3's the scarecrow.
Sarah Jane tells 5 that it's nice to meet him. And then the Third Doctor's like, yes, it was nice to meet you too. And she's like, what? He's like, I'll explain later.
I don't know why she's confused though, because she already knows the Fourth Doctor.
It doesn't make sense.
Sarah's not herself in this story. It's a shame.
She really isn't. She's having a tough time.
But she gets a lot of good stuff later. So I don't feel too bad.
Lastly, I like that as they're all leaving, the Fifth Doctor says, "I'm definitely not the man I was. Thank goodness."
That was quite good. Wait, one last question about the Death Zone.
I'll allow it.
Is the implication that one of the Time Lords who had the idea of this Death Zone, like, left and started at the same shit, and that's what the War Games is?
Ooh.
Sure.
Because, like, the War Games is just the same shit.
Right, and it is a renegade Time Lord who is doing it. That's very interesting.
I buy it.
Maybe they exiled him because he came up with this idea, and they're like, oh, we're not going to do that anymore, and screw off.
You gotta leave. You gotta go.
He's like, okay, I'll make my own warlords, and we'll do it. I always forget which one's the war chief and which one's the warlord.
One's a Time Lord, and one is Steve Jobs.
So then Flavor Flav comes back in.
With her full head, she's got the full headdress on.
And she's like, congrats, Doctor, you're the president now. Time to get to work.
I thoroughly enjoy this bit every time it happens.
And he's like, oh, for sure, right. Well, you're in charge for a minute. I'll take over when I get back. I'm going to go to Gallifrey. I'm going to take my TARDIS, though. I'm going to go my own route. And she's like, well, you can just come with. And he's like, I'm the president. You do what I say. And then he jumps in his TARDIS and they leave. And Tegan and Turlough are too stupid to pick up on what he just did.
Yeah, they are slow on the uptake.
And they're like, I guess you'll be dropping us off in Gallifrey to some TARDISes that actually work. And then we'll go home. And then he's like, nah, we're not doing that. What? I'm not going to do that? Are you dumb? And it's just so Tegan can go, are you telling me you're going to run away from your people in a rickety old police box? And he's like, why not? That's how all this started.
He could have said something slightly pithier.
That's a Terrence Dix line.
I feel like that could have been another line.
It could have just went, why not? Just why not? That's how he ended Enlightenment.
And then he does a little smile or whatever. I will say, I think that Terrence Dix and Nathan Turner have the same opinion about companions, which is that they should be stupid.
Yeah.
But that's it. That's the Five Doctors.
We did it!
Thank God. It's only 2 hours and 25 minutes into this recording.
We're not done yet.
And it's only, I don't know what time it is because I'm not wearing my glasses anymore.
It's 3:30 here, so it's probably 4:30 for you.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back for final thoughts.
All right.
Fans of podcast, I am Rusted Robot. Rusted Robot is 7 feet tall. Yes, I've heard. Episodes in the hundreds with pop culture reviews and geek style news. I am Rusted Robot Podcast. You have come here for geek. Will you listen? Listen for free? No, we will run and we will live. Aye, run and you'll live and dying in your beds many years from now. Would you be willing to trade all those days and come back here for just one more listen? They may take our lives, but they'll never take our Rusted Robot Podcast.
Tony, do you know what time it is? Please don't do a bit.
Okay. That's fine. It's time for final thoughts.
Final thoughts.
All right, Vince, what are your final thoughts?
Well, I've seen this like 3 times now, probably, maybe 4. And I have retained the robot. That's about it. I like the robot. Well, no, I think it's a fun thing. It doesn't entirely work, but it's fun. I like it. And I like the robot.
Adam, what are your final thoughts?
I think the best multi-doctor stories are ones where, at the end, the current doctor is pushed onto a new status quo. So, like, 3 doctors, they're the doctor, twice upon a time. That doesn't happen here, but criticizing the 5 doctors is a bit like kicking a puppy. So I don't think it's fair. It is fun. I mean, it is Terrence Dix doing the William Burroughs cut and paste approach to script writing, just because of the circumstances of production. So yeah, it's fun, and I always enjoy watching it. But I can't say it's good, but it's not bad. And I do so enjoy Anthony Ailey in this. So top marks, kind of. It's 3:30 in the morning. That's all you're gonna get from me. It's coherent.
Nice. Felicity, what are your final thoughts?
I guess I must have seen this story more than any other Doctor Who story. It was my first. It was my introduction to regeneration and Time Lords and the Master and the Brigadier and just kind of the whole concept of the show. And I think it succeeds very well that kind of distilling the classic series, minus the actual first Doctor and minus the fifth Doctor, but I'm sorry, minus the fourth Doctor, but it's obviously of its time and it's a very Terrence Dix script, but I can't really say anything bad about it other than, you know, some parts fall apart. Some set pieces, i.e. chessboard and the Cybermen's whole presence kind of fall apart when you poke at it, but I love it. I'm always going to love it.
Tony, what are your final thoughts?
I think it would be too much to call this one good, but it's definitely super fun. And I do think it, like, it kind of works as like a good introduction to a lot of different Classic Who at once. And I think it's really good for that. And the robot is amazing and it needs to come back. I don't understand anything about it, and I would like to. That's it.
Joe, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah,
it's not like the greatest written thing, but I think it's as good as it can be considering
everything
that happened, you know? Like, they brought on a new writer, they couldn't get Tom Baker, like, all this stuff. Like, you had so many moving parts, and, like, you want to hit all of, like, the greatest hits and all that sort of thing. I feel like it's as good as it can be considering, you know, everything that went into it. So I super enjoy it. It's super fun. The things that I wish could have been fixed a little bit, that I wish maybe were a little bit better, is maybe a little bit more writing for the companions. Maybe a little bit more for the fifth Doctor. He's kind of not present for this.
Yeah.
So much so, considering they don't have five and they don't have four. I mean, they do have five, but he's barely there. But he's barely in it. They don't have four. It almost feels like the three Doctors too, just because it's just one, two, and three for most of it. And I do think Richard Herndold does a good job for what he's given. So I think it's a good idea that he isn't just doing just a straight up impression. I think it works maybe a little bit better that he's just playing a character. But yeah, all in all, I think it's super fun. It's technically the third time I've seen it. And I've enjoyed it every time I've watched it. So those are my final thoughts. Chris, what are your final thoughts?
I mean, it's not a story. It almost seems silly to judge it on the merits of story because it isn't one. It has about as much story to it as like the Ice Capades or like Disney on Ice or something like that. Like, that's not the point of it. It's like that level of story. It's just we're gonna have all of these things happen, or like one of those shows that you go to, like you go to a theme park, and it's like this Indiana Jones show, or like this, you know, or that kind of thing. It's like that level of storytelling, and I think on that level, it's fine. Richard Herndold's interesting. I do agree that it feels like the three Doctors too, and some of that might just be down to Terrence Dix not having written for five. We had mentioned, I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast or off, that like originally they wanted to give a lot of that Gallifrey stuff to four. And like, if so, that's wild. Then what was five even going to do at all?
I think he was going to have the first Doctor's plot and they were going to shove one into the TARDIS.
At least having five kind of solve the mystery, as the great mystery, whodunit, at least makes him feel like he's the present tense Doctor. It's all like the theme park version of Doctor Who, and it's fine if you like that, and like that's the level that you enjoy it at.
So before we go, Vince, is there anything you want to plug?
I want to plug my song Perfectly. It is on YouTube on my channel, which is youtube.com/swenglish, or just type in Tasteful Tuna, it'll come up.
It's a good song.
Yeah.
It is.
Is that it?
Yep, that's the only thing.
You did that perfectly.
Because I'm almost asleep, and I can't think of anything else I've ever done.
Perfect. Adam, is there anything you want
to
plug?
Yeah, I'd like to plug my Seventh Doctor podcast, The Real McCoy. You can find us on iTunes. We should, I don't know, by the time this comes out, we should have our episode about survival out. And you can also find us on Twitter at @real_pod.
Adam, is that Eric Stadnick that you did that with?
Yes, yeah, me and Eric.
I love him. He's a darling, darling person.
He's brilliant.
Felicity, what would you like to plug?
I am affiliated with the Flopcast on the ESO Network. Not a regular co-host, but I do social media and the website. And recently, Kevin and I were doing programming at DragonCon. So if you go to flopcast.net, you'll see the links to all of our other social media. If you go to our YouTube page, you can see all of the panels that we did. We're on the ESO Network, along with this podcast.
Nice. Christine, what would you like to plug?
Hang out, same stuff. Listen to Burn Notice. We might have some new Sam and Pat content coming out soonish. So that's like a fun thing. I don't know. Read the book that I wrote with Joe. Stuff like that. Go to my website, bechrischerry.com. It's all there. Everything that I've done and will do. Read my newsletter.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should do that. That's like just a good life choice.
Ugh, I need to write my newsletter.
Tony, you think you...
Yeah, I just really want people to fucking follow me on Twitter. Please.
FWDPWR.
That's also my handle on Instagram if you want to follow me there too. Just fucking do it. I'm just asking you nicely to fucking do it. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. God damn it.
Nice.
And also keep checking out Unseen World. We're see Unseen World everywhere. I know I keep saying it, but I swear to God there are new episodes coming super soon.
Yeah.
I just saw the finalized edit of episode 1 of season 2 and it's really good. There's some stuff in it that's my favorite stuff that we've made so far. So you should check that out. That's everything. I don't do anything else.
Nice. You can follow me everywhere at Minty Pineapple. I wrote a book with Chris, Road Trippy. I wrote a book with Vince, Princess and the Pterodactyls.
Also, our friend Ray Friesen was involved in some capacity with both of those.
Yes, Ray Friesen at Ray's Great. I have just put up a, I haven't done it yet, but I will have once this podcast has been released. I have just put up a video on mintypineapple.com, or you can go to youtube.com/alohajoe. It's called My Two Clones. It's been doing the festival circuit, and it's pretty much done now. It might be in another one, but I've uploaded it. It's online. Ooh. Watch it.
It's disgusting.
It is.
Yeah.
It's truly abhorrent.
It's a poor life choice, if I'm being
But it's good. It's funny, and it's disturbing, and I like it. But if you like this episode of the podcast, you can check out more on WatchYourAssalon.com. And if you'd like to help us out, you can become a Patreon patron at patreon.com/watchathon. Or you can find our Amazon wishlist at WatchYourAssalon.com/support. And you can sponsor an episode of the podcast by purchasing a DVD or Blu-ray for us. We'll mention you on the podcast and put your name on our Friends of Rassilon page. Speaking of, special thanks again to Matt Golden for sponsoring this episode.
Hey, thanks, Matt.
Golden!
You can check him out at matthewgolden.net. And also, hey, thanks, Vince, for making our theme song.
Yeah!
Hey, thanks, Matt.
You can check out more of their music at soundcloud.com/VincentEL or VincentEL.bandcamp.com. I'm doing your plugs for you, Vince.
Thanks. I also have Twitter. It's Vincent DL.
Very easy to remember. And tune in next time when we talk about the first episode of the last season of The Fifth Doctor, Warriors of the Deep.
It's not great.
Spoilers.
Spoilers. Expectation spoilers. Until next time, keep calm and wrestle on.
Keep calm and wrestle on.
And I love you in a platonic parasocial way.
Bye.
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 As it happens, I am the Doctor. The original, you might say.
You've had this place redecorated, haven't you? Don't like it.
I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
There's no limit to Isaac's genius.
Sorry. Mustache.
No, not the mind probe.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.